possibly live from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center in Trophy Club, Texas, satisfying your need for all things Dallas Mavericks. This is the Mavericks Outsider Report. I'm Rylan Rowe. I'm just a guy with a mic. But with me, as always, the man at the helm, the mild-mannered reporter, Mr. Brian Gutierrez.
This is Trade Deadline Special. Trade Deadline Special.
Should have updated the intro. I didn't even really think about it.
And we're live.
Yeah.
We're not going to do
when
possibly.
When you're live, you just roll.
You just go, and yeah. You get fart sounds.
That was totally unintentional, but that's great. That's how you just make good radio right there.
Pretty much. Mavericks Outside Report from the TJBC, Ted Jones Broadcasting Center from Trophy Club, Texas.
Getting right with ball today, Brian.
Yeah. Busy day. And we've got a friend of the show, Mr. Mark Folliwell, on board with us. How are you doing, Mark?
Very good, fellas. What's up?
Just ready for some trade deadline shenanigans, basically.
Keep your phone charged.
I think we've got a whole lot to talk about, don't we?
Definitely. All right, so
let's get right into it.
Obviously, the big domino that dropped, which was necessary to drop, was Carmelo Anthony going to the Denver Nuggets. Or, no, he was on the Denver Nuggets, but he went to the New York Knicks. So what was your take on that specific deal, Mark?
I thought that all things considered, I thought Denver ended up doing pretty well for themselves, considering you'd have to think they didn't have just a ton of leverage. I mean, they did have some, because they could have always just made Melo stay there and sign an extension there. If he wanted to go to New York, he'd probably lose out on a lot of money under the expected new parameters of the collective bargaining agreement when that gets renegotiated, whenever that's going to eventually happen. But I thought that to get Felton and Gallinari and Mozgov and Wilson Chandler, I mean, they got four guys who can presumably play a little bit. Some of them starting caliber players, and certainly people who could at least fill a role on a decent team. And they got a couple of picks out of it. So, you know, and the only thing they gave up, obviously, besides Melo, was Chauncey Billups. And then the rest of it was all just superfluous spare parts. So I thought that all things considered, everybody got what they wanted. New York got what they wanted. Melo got what he wanted. To some degree, New Jersey got what they wanted because they drove up the Knicks' asking price. And Denver got a decent haul out of it. So this is, while on one hand it's obviously causing a lot of gnashing of teeth because, yet again, it was another player and his agents dictating the terms. And I read a great piece today from, I think it was Ken Berger on CBSSportsLine.com, which basically indicated he thought this was the final straw and this is just another thing that's going to lead to the massive labor Armageddon that a lot of people are forecasting because owners want to take back some control of the game and they don't like players dictating the terms. But, despite all that, Melo's going to thrive in New York. He's going to thrive on that stage. And it's in those regards, it will be good for the league because clearly it's generated even more interest than already existed, that is, with the resurgence of the Knicks this year.
I think that if you look back to where we all thought this would end up back in, what was it, July, when the rumblings first started coming out that Carmelo was eyeing New York pretty heavily, Denver's new GM basically came out and said, hey, we didn't keep Carmelo and he was our guy, thus we failed. But I can't imagine how they could have expected to do any better. I think everybody thought they were going to come out far worse than they did. Right. It's not like they got any world beaters from New York. They got some pieces that might work and may turn out. Gallinari probably is the top there in potential-wise. But the rest of the guys, like you said, at worst, they're serviceable. I don't know. Mozgov may turn out to be a nothing. But Felton and those guys, serviceable guys, you know?
Sure. I like Raymond Felton. The Mavs had some interest in him a point in time a couple of years ago at one point. So I really was impressed with how Gallinari's game has expanded in the one time that I've gotten to see New York in person this year when the Mavs were up there about 3 or 4 weeks ago. So they did all right. Like I said, I think that they did all right for themselves. I think that they took a better deal, in my opinion, than the deal that they would have gotten out of New Jersey because Favors is promising, sure, but all those picks – I don't know. I don't get as enamored with picks as some people do, because it's so much more of a crapshoot in the draft nowadays because players are coming into the league from, a young age, 1 year of college, from Europe, whatever. I mean, it's not the draft is not the same as it used to be, and there are just not that many sure things. So I think taking guys who have at least a little bit of track record and a little bit of pedigree, I think, is a better deal than just stockpiling picks, which is what they would have done under the New Jersey deal.
Definitely. And you started to allude to New Jersey and this effect in this trade, but New Jersey did their own deal, which I don't know about you, Rylan. I was stunned.
Shocked, man.
I was just flat out stunned.
And it's like it's like in true Utah, it's almost like a final parting sort of tribute to Jerry Sloan, who you can imagine is a guy who I imagine gets up early with the chickens, has his toast and his coffee before anybody else in the house even wakes up. And those Utah folks got that deal done definitely before I woke up. I don't know about you.
Well, what was going on, it was a funny story. Earl K. Sneed, who was on last week, talked about how he had this whole shoot-around report ready for the game against Utah, and it featured a lot of Deron Williams involved. Well, he's not on the team anymore. So, needless to say, Earl was not happy that he had to redo his little shoot-around report. But how stunned were you, Mark, when you heard the deal between New Jersey and Utah?
Did you guys hear the comments of Phoebe the Greyhound a minute ago, by the way?
No.
In the background?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She had some comments. She was weighing in. She's excited about Mello. And she's really thought that was a good thing that he's ended up in New York. And let's see. Let's see if she's going to tell us anything about the you going to tell us anything about the Deron Williams trade? No? Okay, well, she realized that she was on the air, so apparently she decided to freeze up all of a sudden. But I thought that, number one, I was stunned like everybody else was. I mean, you could have knocked me over with a feather when I first saw the Twitter news about the fact that he was being traded. Initially, I was a little leery of, I mean, what the heck is Utah doing? They're blowing it up. And I guess to some degree they kind of are. You know, obviously to lose your head coach 2 weeks ago and to make this trade. But all things considered, much like I said about Denver, I think they probably ended up getting a pretty decent haul because they've got a promising young player, the guy that we just talked about a minute ago in Favors. They got an above average point guard who I like. I don't think that he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. But I do like Devin Harris and appreciate what he did here. And I think that as NBA point guards go, he's not, you know, in the top tier, but he's certainly above average. And in the case of the picks that they got, at least they've got two likely lottery picks. Now that one of them is this year in a draft that everybody thinks is going to be just a big bag of nothing. But the other one could be a lottery pick too, and it could be next year in 2012, whenever it's Golden State's pick, which I hear reports that it has some level of lottery protection on it. But they did okay for themselves. I think maybe had they shopped him around a little bit more, maybe they could have gotten a little bit more, but I don't think they wanted to go through the protracted circus. And they wouldn't have gone through anything like what Denver went through, but I don't think they wanted to deal with it at all. They figured, all right, let's make the deal, and we're getting something we like, and there's no reason to make 50 phone calls for what may not be that much more of a return.
Right, right. Again, we've got Mark Folliwell, play-by-play voice of the Dallas Mavericks TV broadcast with us right now on the Mavericks Outside Report. I don't know if you know this, Mark. I might have told you this in passing, but I'm not sure. Me and Rylan see you kind of as our big brother. Just kind of.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I like that. That's good.
You're a busy guy. You're doing your own basketball.
Wait, I think we're going to get a comment on Deron Williams here.
Okay.
Hold on.
Okay.
Oh, there we go.
There it is. Okay. Now it's Deron official. Will.
Oh, and another one,
there
too.
It is.
So that was your dog barking?
No, it's your production, producer doing that, too.
Okay, because I heard my dog barking, and so I dropped the headphones and just start going, what's your deal? Realized.
it's a greyhound.
It's dual action going on
right
now.
Okay, good. Well, as long as we're all on equal footing here.
but we see you as a big brother. You're doing your basketball wizardry and stuff like that, and then you take some time with us. So we definitely appreciate
you guys as my sons. So.
Oh wow! Well, how about that?
Yeah, you guys are like my sons.
Well,
so.
That's awesome. Before we get to
don't make me ever have to get out the belt or anything.
Okay.
Like that. So,
oh, okay. We'll make sure about that.
All right.
Just to sum up we've mainly touched on the big deals.
Before we move on from those two, real quick, let's think about what this means for Dallas in the Western Conference with two teams. I know it was becoming increasingly frustrated for most Maverick fans to see these teams that we want to view as middle-tier playoff teams like Denver and Utah with these young stars like Williams, and obviously Anthony's been around longer, but you thought, oh man, we're going to have to deal with them for 5-6 more years, regardless of who they have around them. They're going to pose problems. And it's kind of a weight off the shoulders a little bit for us Western Conference people. I mean, we talked about how
I've got a number of points. I'd like to just jump in and hit on a couple of things about that, if I may.
Go sure.
That number one, what you're bringing up, I think, I'm very glad you brought this up, and I didn't know the conversation was going to go this way, but I'm glad it did, because I think that, once again, this is a testament to what this thing has done for going on 11 years now of being a 50-win team, because New Orleans was going to be the next big thing a few years ago, and Denver was going to be the next big thing, and Utah was going to be the next big thing, and I don't think people realize, whatever disappointments we all have about this thing not achieving the ultimate level of success, and that being, of course, a championship.
Right.
But I don't think people realize off the jump how hard it is to be this good of a team and put a competitive, good, quality product on the floor year in, year out, as high of a level as they have performed in the regular season. I don't think people understand how difficult that is to do, because time and time again we see the next big thing be good for a short period of time and then realize that, whenever you get a target on your back and people realize you're good and you can't sneak up on anyone and you have to, maintain this level of success and ward off all the demons that success causes and the expectations that make, some things collapse under the weight of their own expectations once you start to get a little bit of success. So for it to be as good as it's been for as long as it's been, I hope people appreciate what they have in that regard, because the city like Denver, or a city like Salt Lake City, New Orleans, they've had those fleeting moments. I should say, Utah had long sustained success under Stockton and Malone, but this most recent reincarnation of good Utah Jazz basketball, the run for it was pretty not too terribly short, but it certainly wasn't anything like what the Mavericks have, and now it appears to be over. And the other thing I would add to what you guys were discussing about the Western Conference playoffs and the playoff picture is that I do think that this puts more of an importance on the Mavs being the 2 seed, because I think 5 and 6 are still going to be pretty good, and I think that by the time the dust settles, it's Portland and New Orleans. Both of those teams, although New Orleans' move was a little bit more minor, but Portland got Wallace today, so I think both teams improved themselves a little bit. They're probably 5 and 6. And then you have just a grab bag. Denver's probably one of the last two playoff teams. Maybe Utah, probably not, though. Maybe Memphis, maybe Phoenix. They made a nice little trade today to get Aaron Brooks. So there is the bottom of the Western Conference playoff bracket clearly isn't nearly as good as it used to be. You need 50 wins to get in through the last 3 years, and I think 45 could get you in this year. And so not only do you have a bracket that's weakened at the bottom, but you even, it looks to me anyway, like you have two tiers, and 7 and 8 could be 44, 45, 46 win teams.
Right. It's a totally different race now in the bottom half of the conference.
Sure. Yeah, and it's going to be kind of interesting to watch.
I'm sorry?
I was just going to say, it's going to be interesting to watch with these different teams, I think, battling for the bottom spot, that pretty much with Denver and Utah at their strength, it was going to be tough for more than one team that we're not used to crack that. But now you never know, like you say, with Phoenix and some of the others.
Yeah, Memphis is in that picture, too. They've got a lot of home games. They've got, of all those teams down there at the bottom, this is as of coming out of the All-Star break, and I don't know how much it's changed over these last couple of days, but Portland had the most home games with 15, and Memphis had the second most home games with 14. So those two teams have a little bit of built-in scheduling advantages compared to everyone else down there. But I do think Denver, their haul that they got in the trade was good enough, and George Karl is a heck of a coach, and I think that there's some relief off the shoulders of those that stayed. There's still talent, and I think Karl will thrive in this sort of throw-it-together-on-the-fly kind of situation. I think that you'll really see him shine here. So I think, if you ask me to pick, I feel really, really confident that Denver's in the mix down there as far as one of those last couple of playoff spots.
Right. Just to put a nice bow, even though there's so much to deal with the deadline, in about 30 to 45 seconds, how would you sum up the rest of the deals that we didn't get a chance to discuss?
Love, or at least like a whole lot, what Oklahoma City did. They gave up a little bit in Jeff Green. Clearly, they're going to suffer a little bit on the offensive end of the floor. But defensively, they're going to be much better now. They needed defense, rebounding, size, toughness. And with Kendrick Perkins and Nazi Muhammad, they got that today. That'll mean more minutes for Ibaka. you probably still keep, as you and I were talking about on the phone earlier today, Brian, you probably still keep Harden in a six-man role and Ibaka as the starting power forward right now. So they're better. I really, really like what Oklahoma City did. I like what New Orleans did with Carl Landry. I've always liked him. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of meh on Gerald Wallace. They improved a little bit, but I'm not a huge fan of his. He's okay. I don't mean to imply that I think he's a bad guy or a bad player. It's just, I don't know, I'm not wild about him. But he's okay. I mean, they certainly made themselves better because they didn't give up anything.
We were talking about this before the show. What do you make of Hasheem Thabeet?
Not very good. Not a whole lot, but he's 7'3", and so because of that, he's going to get opportunities, and people are going to try to coach him up and turn him into something. Because as collegiately, his last year there at UConn, I mean, the guy averaged a double double. He put up tremendous shot blocking numbers, and so he might still be able to turn into a defensive oriented center. The thing about it is just his body frame looks a little bit weird to me. He's got, he doesn't have, whenever you saw, I mean, when we're talking about these ultra, ultra big guys, and when we're talking about people that are 7'3 and above, we don't see too many of them. But for example, Yao had such broad shoulders and just tree trunk legs. And when I first saw him, it's like, okay, this guy is going to be something. He's not just a freak show out there at 7'5. He's got a chance to be really good. And clearly he was before, sadly, the injuries deprived him of his abilities and whatnot. But the beat to me, the guy's got really narrow shoulders. He doesn't have those big base and the big tree trunk legs that Yao had. So I don't know if he's ever going to be just a solid guy in the middle along the lines of Yao. So he may be just yet another one of these guys. When you get in that 7'3", 7'4", 7'5 range, you just don't see too many of those guys actually turn out to be anything more than just freak shows. Rick Smith was good at 7'4". Mark Eaton, obviously ended up having a really good career for himself. Yao, that injuries, look what injuries did with him. Ilgauskas is 7'3 and has been okay. He's been more than okay. He's had a really, really nice career for himself.
Arvydas Sabonis could have been president of the world if not for his leg injuries. I mean,
what was his official height? Was Sabonis 7'3"?
I thought he was listed at 7'3", and if he's just rewatching
that tree trunk leg.
Yeah, wow. I was rewatching the Once Brothers 30 for 30 with my wife, kind of taking her through, this guy and that guy, and there was a quick shot of Sabonis with this crazy catfish hunter mustache and a mullet, and I was like, do you remember Sabonis from Portland? And she's like, barely. And I said, this guy, if you could take a carbon copy of this guy on this VHS video, he would conquer the world. He would dunk on entire countries and knock down threes.
And he is listed at 7'3".
Yeah, so that's another guy.
Right in your face, Yugoslavia. Here it is.
Yeah. In your face.
So, David, Thabeet, not so much. When I first heard Thabeet for Battier, my red flag just went up immediately because Battier is a useful piece, and I'm surprised if they were going to move him. There wasn't a taker somewhere else where he was going to go to a team that actually had a little more. Although I guess Memphis is knocking on the door now with the movement we just talked about, but...
Oh, I think they're eighth, actually, in the standings today.
Right, yeah. So now that I think about it, Thabeet really is, if he doesn't pan out at all, which I think that's very likely he will not, he's virtually an expiring contract next year because he's third year of his rookie deal where they have the team option that they can just let him go. So they'll probably flip him next year to somebody for some savings
Keep in mind, look at what Houston's rolling out there right now with Yao and his career and hanging in the balance. Their center spot right now is Brad Miller and undersized Chuck Hayes, who I like a lot. I mean, but I don't think that you're going to be successful asking Chuck Hayes to roll out there and play 38 minutes a game at center, and he's having games like that recently. He's playing a ton. So I understand why they took that gamble, because he is big and he could be had for relatively cheap. And if you have and if you hit on the guy and if you can turn him into just something decent, Then you've made a heck of a trade. You've traded the expiring contract of a nice player, a glue guy, but not anybody that you're building a franchise around. In terms of you get a guy who's 7'3", and as we all know, you can't coach that, you can't teach that. That's the thing that every team in this league is still searching for. And so I get where Houston's coming from and taking a chance on him. I haven't seen enough out of him so far to think that they're going to pay off, but. But somebody who's far better than I am at teaching big men will obviously be working with him, and they'll see if they can bring the best out in him.
You just need to make that big man camp start.
the Pete Newell situation. I grew up with a guy that was 7'3" that went to Pete Newell's camp, and I think he's probably like riding a tractor right now or something. So it doesn't work out for everybody.
Did you know Rick Carlisle actually used to work at his camps back in the day?
No.
And you know what? And Dwayne Casey worked with him when Dwayne was over in Japan coaching. He did some tours with Pete Newell, and you know, he would just hold court and tell stories, and both of those guys, as anybody who has been around him and been around basketball will, they speak so glowingly of him as just one of the game's true gentlemen. And so just as it relates to our little sphere of the world, though, there are people that we know that have a connection to the late, great Pete Newell and have nothing but just effusive praise for him.
Well, now that we've talked a lot about trade situation, the next logical thing to look at is potential veteran buyout candidates. So we're going to take ourselves a really brief break, Mark, and then we're going to come back again and go over those with you and see if we can come up with anything here in the patented, as Brian likes to call it, MOR think tank.
Yeah, this is think tank. This is think tank. Just letting you know. It's happening. The think tank is
Get her done.
Okay. That's up after the break. Mark Falwell will be hanging out through the break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Mavericks Outside Report from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center. Yeah.
You don't have to ask me.
I know who Mark, since we're actually talking to you during the breaks, we usually listen to the bumper music in between, and I know some of the songs that Ryland's playing, but our usual game coming out of the break is, who is that?
We have our little music talk round table going on.
Yeah, but we had that.
excuse me. I missed the bumper music because I was checking my text. I missed the bumper music, so I couldn't even participate in the game.
You're busy.
Well, it was Rolling Stones, so I was basically just kind of taunting Brian and saying, you better not have to ask.
No, I know these songs. I know some of them, at least.
What Rolling Stones song did I miss?
Tumbling Dice.
Oh, okay. I barely even know it. Get Off My Cloud would have been, if you'd have played that would have been that's my favorite Stone song. So.
He would have thrown the phone and been like, all right, let's go. Let's go. We're back. Mavericks Outside Report from the Ted Jones Broadcasting Center. We're here with Mark Falwell, play-by-play voice for the Dallas Mavericks TV broadcast. And we were talking about the massive trading deadline bonanza that went on in over the past 2 or 3 days. And now we're going to keep it more in the realm of the Mavericks. Obviously, the Mavericks were quiet today during the deadline. A lot of people were wondering what was going to go on. Are they going to get Tayshaun Prince? Hey, why is J.R. Smith's name popping up? Why is Detroit so silly? So on and so forth. But the Mavericks ended up staying quiet.
You like peach cobbler? I mean,
once you get into food at that point, you know it's going to be a slow day.
Who likes croutons under salad? Yeah, all those questions. The burning questions of the wrap there today.
So. Yeah.
Sorry, did we just go insane again?
No. Insane is good.
Today, that's what you guys want.
Yes.
You're right in the wheelhouse with cobbler.
the tongue is wagging and ready to just swing at that bad boy. So the Mavs were quiet, and what's your take on that, and what's your take on what could happen going forward?
Well, there were certainly players out there that I would have been very, very happy about, and Brian, you know, you and I have had discussions, and I think that people who have read the Twitter stuff that I put out there or the SportsDayDFW.com chat or, where other various places where I've been able to disseminate some thoughts about it. I think everybody knows that I was on board with the idea of Devin Harris coming back. Unfortunately, he was used to catch he was bait to catch a whole lot bigger fish than what he was going to catch here. So, certainly understandable that that ended up going the way it did. Once we got down to some of the other names that were out there, I would have loved to have seen Tayshaun Prince here, but clearly Detroit, for whatever reason, didn't want to part with him. I don't know. I never really heard this name out there. This is just with my own wheels spinning in my head. I wonder if there was ever any sort of flirtation with Kirilenko. I don't know that Utah had a whole lot to gain by keeping him. He's an expiring contract, but you could have taken some mad expiring contracts and traded it to Utah and saved them money on a luxury tax, saved them almost, you couldn't have gotten them maybe under the tax line, because you could have gotten them very, very close. And maybe you could have even, you know, concocted some sort of deal that had gotten them under the tax line that would not have required you taking on future commitments, since Kirilenko, like I said, is an expiring contract. And that's something that I just dreamed up in my head. Have no idea if that was something that was talked about at all, but that would have been something I would have liked.
Did you get an aneurysm like I did when you saw the name of J.R. Smith briefly floated?
I would rather the Mavericks trade for J.R. Ewing than J.R. Smith.
I'm right there with you.
I had absolutely no interest in him. Gerald Wallace is we sort of touched on him. You know, I think he's all right. I don't mean to imply that I think he sucks or anything like that. Clearly, the guy's got something. But I've just never been an overwhelmingly big fan of his game. You know, he was great last year. I will say that his 09-10 season was fantastic and was worthy of the All-Star appearance that he had. Matter of fact, right down the road at Cowboys Stadium in Arlington.
Right.
But at the price of, I would have seen the wisdom in taking on future money with Devin Harris, because you know, everyone's going to need, or a lot of teams would want a point guard. So, you know, if you have concerns about a hard cap and all that business and being able to re-sign Chandler, which I certainly had those concerns going forward with this thing, and I think that you had to have that in the back of your mind. Well, at least in the case of Harris and his 2 years that he has left, and number one, the money isn't quite as big. And number two, I think that you could turn him into something that could help your team and also put you in a position where you're flexible enough if we are indeed headed towards a hard cap. And who knows if that's the case, or maybe we're headed towards an even more punitive luxury tax. I don't know. Another discussion for another time. Point being is, I think you have to make decisions now with at least a little bit of an eye to the future and whatever your guess at the parameters are that we're going to be, to be working under going forward. I don't think Harris would have hampered you, because you could have flipped him for something. And you could have kept him and moved somebody else. I don't know. But, you know, point guard, everybody needs those. Right. A small forward that's making $21 million over the next 2 years, I don't know that I was really intrigued by the idea of getting Gerald Wallace in here for that, because I think that might have been a whole lot harder thing to turn around. And I think that if next whatever day the labor agreement comes out, if we roll around to that period of free agency next July, August, November, whatever the heck it is, if all of a sudden the Mavericks were sitting there and they had a glut of high-paid small forwards, or two of them, and Wallace and Marion, and because that extra money they took on in Wallace, they couldn't re-sign Tyson Chandler. I mean, I think we'd all be pretty pissed, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
I want that guy to be part of this thing in the future. I mean, he's been vital to what they've done this year. I love the guy. I mean, if anybody listens to his segments of Ben and Skin, obviously he's a great dude.
Yeah, he killed it this morning with Marvin Gaye. He actually broke, for those who don't realize or weren't listening, he broke into Let's Get It On at the end of his drive time with Ben and Skin. It was awesome.
I think it is so important to make him a priority, and I'm sure that the Mavs obviously feel this way too. I mean, there's no reason to believe that they don't, but I think you had to make moves at this time with an eye towards what you're dealing with in the future. Although you also have to make some moves to try to win now. It is a double-edged sword that you're dealing with. But I just don't think that Gerald Wallace was that guy, and that was another name that was out there at the end. Disappointed they didn't get Harris or Prince. Those things, I'm sorry that they didn't happen. But beyond that, I'm not too. And Kirilenko, even though I don't know that he was a rumored acquisition. That was just a follow up. Throw us up against the wall and see if it sticks, kind of thing.
That's what we like.
Yeah,
didn't work out. So onward and upward. And obviously, you know, they're viewing, rightfully so, the midseason acquisitions for these guys are Page and Roddy.
Right.
I mean, those are their big changes midstream on this thing. Stojakovic and Roddy. So I get that. I understand that. Clearly those guys are helping this thing lately.
Right.
Yeah, for me, Prince was the guy that I really thought, if they managed to bring him in, the fit was just so nice. He's not your ultimate two-way player, but he's balanced very well balanced, balanced enough to fit that mold for what he would do for Dallas. Once it became clear that Dumars was sitting on his hands with that, for me, it's really no skin off my back. I like what they have to say about Caron being important to the team. I think that sends a good message. The players were overwhelmingly not in favor of any deal, although I think they probably would have been happy to see Tayshaun Prince walk in the locker room. But
of course. I mean, what else do you expect them to say right now?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So all things being equal, you know, it's probably – of all the years for the Mavs to stand pat, this is probably a good personnel situation for them to be standing pat, all things considered.
Well, I know that Brian was down there today whenever Donnie spoke, and you know, and of course, Donnie's always a positive, upbeat guy.
Right.
But, you know, as he spoke about, you know, the chemistry thing certainly is important. I did laugh because I do agree with him on this. There was a quote that Brian, you had today on Twitter. I saw that one of the key things in management is to know when to not screw it up.
Right, right. That's important. Some people don't understand that.
I have some HSOs about my day job on that.
Even Greg Popovich has said that. You know, Greg Popovich has said before that, you know, look, there was certainly an element of luck of those guys winning the lottery with Duncan. And then he has pointed out that over the years that, yeah, they got a great player and they've managed not to screw it up. And I know that sounds a little bit silly, but there is a lot of truth to that. That, you know, sometimes the best moves that you make are the ones you don't make. And we'll see if that turns out to be the case with what happens with the Mavs, because, you know, as you guys know, I thought there were some things out there that made sense for them, but those things were either trumped by what someone else offered, or for whatever reason, the team in question wasn't willing to part with that particular piece. And in some defense, I felt like maybe, you know, there's some shots being taken at Joe Dumars, and his GM track record hasn't been very good lately, of course. But I think in some defense of him, one has to wonder what their clouded ownership situation in Detroit, how that's impacting what they can and can't do.
That's true.
Well, we do have that one Maverick roster spot still available, so the only thing on
the table
is the veteran buyout. Now, Mark Stein, a couple hours ago, gave his very well-educated opinion, as we all know, on what he considered near-locked for buyouts. Just to run some names across you guys, he said Troy Murphy, T.J. Ford, Jared Jeffries, Jason Capono.
Sunday Lounge.
Yeah, and the Sunday Lounge. Right, this is insanity right now that we've always talked about. We've got those players mentioned. Have you heard anyone else, Mark, that might be involved in that?
There's a story out there that Mike Bibby's going to ask for one. Don't know that he's going to get it, but he's going to ask for one.
Right. So
at least there's a story out there that says that.
So out of those names, which ones really pop out to you the most in terms of maybe the Mavericks looking?
I would be interested in a point guard. Absolutely. Point guard would be the way I would look, because I think that you can never have too much quality at the one or the five. And my opinion on it is, and I don't think Bibby, if he were bought out, I don't think Bibby would come here for this role. Ford maybe would, though. But I think that it would be A, an insurance policy behind what you have. B, it would be someone who, between JJ and Roddy and this as of yet, Mr. X, that might come in as a backup point guard, as a third string point guard or whatever. Mr. X could help you give Jason Kidd some games off between now and the end of the season. Could give Kidd 3-4 games off, something like that. And I think that, you know, by all accounts, that was part of the plan last summer.
Right.
Was that the Mavs would have Roddy, and he would get this experience in summer league and this experience in France playing point guard, and he was going to be, you know, a bigger factor, a bigger member of the team, and a bigger member of the rotation. And so, you know, they envisioned this situation where you know, Roddy would play a lot of point guard, and Kidd would get to take entire games off or come off the bench or whatever the case may be in a few games. And that obviously, with Roddy's injury, didn't get a chance to materialize. So if in the next 25 games, if you could get Kidd 2-3-4 games off, I think that would be great. And I think that, like I said, if Mr. X as a available point guard is available in a buyout, then that would be the way I would go.
If you couldn't
get a point guard to come in here, then and you wanted to fill the roster spot, the guy I would probably look at that point would be, you know, since we think Murphy's going to to Boston. I think that Capone is just a duplication of Stoyakovich.
Right.
Jared Jeffries doesn't do anything for me. I think that because he has a track record here and was liked, I would probably maybe around March 15th or something like that, maybe I'd pick up the phone and call Pavlovich.
Yeah. He showed he can work. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would give you depth at another at small forward, and I think that depth at that position at the three would not be the worst thing in the world. I mean, Stevenson would probably would probably play some there, maybe even before Sasha would, if you wanted somebody to play some defense in a particular matchup in the playoffs or something like that. But that would probably be the route that I would go.
Right,
but I don't think you make that call right now. I think you guys know the rule. The rule is that you have to be bought out by March 1st if you want to be eligible to sign on someone else's playoff roster. You don't have to sign March 1st. You just have to be bought out by March 1st, and then you can take your time and make your decision and figure out where you want to go. So, but yeah. If you want to be eligible for the playoff roster, you got to be bought out by March 1st. So,
right.
If everybody gets bought out and you go grocery shopping, if you will, for those few days after March 1st, and you don't get anything you like, then that Pavlovich option, I would assume, would probably be there sometime in the middle of March, and maybe you go that direction to have that one extra body.
Wouldn't mind seeing Sasha here again. Guy can play. He's shown that he can.
Maybe the other thing that might influence that decision is 3 weeks from now we'll have a better read on where Butler is in this effort to come back. And I still think that we would have to consider ourselves extremely fortunate if he came back and was able to do anything in the playoffs. But, look, Donnie talked about it today. I saw your quote that you had about it, Brian. He is obviously working his ass off to get back. So, I love that. That's great. I mean, I would expect nothing less because that guy is tough, hard worker, great guy, great locker room guy, and a true professional. So I would expect nothing less of that. And apparently he's doing it, and so – maybe it's more realistic than I think it is. Maybe it's more of a possibility than we all think it is. And at least come March 15th, before you have to make any decision, you'll get a better read on that in terms of somebody who could be small forward depth. I would bet that Sasha Pavlovich option might even be there until the 1st of April. So you might be able to sit on that until April 1 before you made any sort of decision about, well, do we need an extra body in here, or is Butler going to be back at the 1st of May or something like that?
Definitely.
Boy, that would be crazy. I'm very pessimistic on that outlook just because it is a knee, and establishing that rhythm, coming back from a layoff, going into the playoffs, because playoffs start last weekend of April.
Right,
so
right.
They could start
earlier than that. I mean, the playoffs will start, the last game of the regular season is April 13th, so we'll throw the ball up for the first playoff game on the weekend of April 16 and 17.
Wow. It's right around the corner.
They're moving them on me.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So, gosh,
it's less than 2 months away. I mean, Butler said that when he had his injury as a teenager, it was a 4-month deal. So 4 months would put him at the 1st of May, and the 1st of May will basically be the very end. It could be basically the day of a game 7 in the first round, or it could be right before the second round gets started. Because January 1, obviously, we unfortunately all remember the day he got hurt. So 4 months away would be May 1, obviously.
Right.
But you didn't know you were going to get such intelligent math discussion on the show, did you?
You know what? We go all over the place. We got dogs talking. We don't care.
We got whatever bonus we can get, we'll take it. Of course, when he was...
Spontaneity, yes. It is the spontaneous Mavs outsider report.
It's the buzzword.
Yes.
When Caron had that previous injury, though, I'm sure whatever competition he was going up against, he was able to be very effective in his first game back. He probably could have been effective on one leg at 15, right? But
a different deal now.
Sure. So that's really where I come from in terms of rhythm with the team and rotation, and you see how well-oiled the rotation gets when the Mavs are playing optimally, and everything that goes into coming back and playing at that level, especially in the playoffs. But I think that the effect that he's had just in rehabbing probably helped his case in not being sent away in a deal just to take advantage of the contract. I think people like that attitude that he's bringing. Look at what this guy's doing.
No question.
Just to try to
no
get
question.
Back, just to even though he knows even if he does get back, He may not see the floor. He may kill himself between now and the end of April and still not see the floor just because of circumstances, but he's doing it anyway because that's just the kind of guy that he is. And so
he's got, look, that guy's got mad respect in the locker room.
Right.
Those guys love him, and there's they are all in on Caron. You know, in terms of his teammates in the locker room. And I like the guy too. Hey, look, what's not to like? He's personable. He's a hard worker. He's all business inside the lines, and he is all business inside the lines. But you know, he's a guy who you can laugh and cut up with and is engaging away from the floor. I think he might, if he wanted to, I think he would have a future in media when he gets done playing. He's a well-spoken guy, good voice, friendly. You know, the camera seems to agree with him. You know, so I think he would have, if he wanted to, I think he'd, you know, who knows, it might be your future voice of the Mavs, Caron Butler.
Look at that.
There you go. You'll
touch use. It's a little media industry prognostication from your TV voice of the Mavericks, Mr. Mark Followell.
All right.
Well, no, I do mean everything I said. Like, I love the guy and have nothing but the utmost respect for him. Now, as far as coming back as soon as he says, it's going to be tough. And I'm trying to go through my head here and think, okay, Prisbilla had a patellar tendon injury. Now, he's a 7-footer, 7'1", to be exact, I think. And so that's an entirely different deal. But I think it took the vanilla gorilla, I believe, as they like to call him. I think it you know, he hurt it right before Christmas of 09 here in Dallas.
Right.
And then he slipped in the shower in early March of 2010. And didn't get back until right around Thanksgiving, first week of December, something like that. And then and somebody may need to check me on this, but didn't Kalena Azubuike for then Golden State, now of the Knicks, didn't he have a ruptured patellar tendon last year? And has he even seen the floor this year?
He has not seen the floor. I do know it because that is my favorite name in the NBA.
Azubuike.
Saw him with the Fort Worth Flyers one day, and after that, I was hooked. I was Azubuike all day. but yeah, it can obviously there's a lot of variation there in you know, particular individuals being able to come back from that injury.
Sure. Those are two examples of it, of guys who clearly haven't been able to come back that soon, but you never know. I mean, anything's possible if you're willing to put in the work and you know, as whenever I get sick and have to and medicate myself and take antibiotics for a short period of time because I save them from each time I go to the doctor and don't take the full amount so I can save some for the next time I get sick so I don't have to go to the doctor.
So smart.
And people always lecture me about how stupid that is.
That's smart.
You're supposed to take all of your antibiotics at once. And you know what I tell them? I said, I know that everybody says that, but I got it under control. I know my own body. So
smart.
There you go.
Caron
Butler probably knows his own body.
I think it's genius. Every time one of us needs a medication pronto and can't get it, I just wish we lived on the border. I mean, I go into my rant of how I should just be able to go buy it, and if I die, I die.
If he dies,
you know,
he dies.
Yeah.
That really is. That's what I do. If I get sick and I have to go to the doctor, and get you know, you get the 10-day prescription of antibiotics, and then I'll take 5 days worth, and then I'll save 5 days worth for the next time I get sick. Because when I get sick, it's always, and I'm never sick for that longer period of time, or at least I don't feel like crap for a long period of time. I get sick and I feel awful for a day or two, and then I get to that point where I start feeling a lot better, but then I sound like crap because all of the infection or whatever that makes you feel bad, it all migrates into my sinuses at that point, and then I walk around. Even though I feel okay for the next week, it's like I have a clothespin holding my nose shut. So I'm going around for a week sounding like this all the time, which is not a whole lot of fun to sound like this all the time, but that's what it ends up being for me for about a week or so. So
it's not good when you get paid to talk.
Yeah. 3 hours of Mavericks basketball sounding like this isn't very good, is it?
No, I would say not.
I'm checking Coop if that ever happens.
That's what we're hiring Caron Butler.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Well, Mark, we appreciate all the time you've given us tonight. I know it's been a busy day for you, checking the Twitterverse, seeing what's going on, and using your brain to look ahead. I know you've got work to do to prep for the road trip ahead, and you've got a birthday coming up, don't you?
I do, on Saturday. How about that? The big 4-0.
Happy birthday, Mark. Happy birthday.
Appreciate that, fellas. Thank you very much. Well, I appreciate hearing that from my sons. So, thank you.
That's going to be weird now.
That's just because I'm actually...
Right, I'll go back to the Big Brother.
There you go. Okay,
we can a week from Saturday, I'm going to be 31, so...
That's just weird.
That's a very awkward age gap for that relationship.
Yeah, yeah. It is. Something horribly wrong that was happening. Yeah.
It was a crazy time. All right. Well, Mark, we appreciate it. Again, happy birthday. Looking forward. And I guess we will see you when you get back.
All right. Let's watch those Mavs and enjoy this good time in Mavericks basketball land.
Yes, sir.
You got it. So on the other side of this break, we're going to come back with some of our own evaluation of where the Mavs are at this point in the season and some audio from today from Donnie and the rest of the team and more freestyle spontaneity on the Mavs Outsider Report, courtesy MavsMoneyBall.com.
I like that.
That is a band called Roman Candle that I stumbled upon accidentally this past summer. Courtney and I went to San Francisco for kind of a quick vacation and went up to Napa Valley because chicks like wine.
I love the wine.
And so we rented a car so that we could go up and do kind of more or less whatever we wanted on our own time. And it had XM. In the car, so I was just surfing, ran across this band, Roman Candle, that had a song I liked, so came home, iTunes.
Get it
and got it.
That cold fry was terrible.
Yeah, you don't eat cold french fries.
It was bad. I'm sorry. Mavericks Outside Report, TJBC. I'm getting that now.
Yeah, man. From Mavs, MavsMoneyBall.com, and now the phone lines are open. If you're listening live and you'd like to holler at us, it's 214-317-4787. Ding, ding, ding.
Still have it on my phone.
214-317-4787. Throw us a curveball. I think we've established that we prefer spontaneity. So, yeah, Brian, trade deadline, busy day. You and I resolved some time ago that we were going to do around the midseason mark, sort of our midseason report card, if you will, and you've got some audio from the Mavericks president of all things round ball today that kind of goes into that. So why don't you take us there?
Let's go.
Antonio, nobody did anything. Is that a sign that everybody's kind of feeling good about
it? You know, I think I can speak for only us. It's a sign that chemistry is really important, you know, and I know San Antonio feels like that as well. And when you've got it, don't mess with it, you know. And I think, you know, I think there's one of the arts of management is not screwing things up, right? And so that was kind of part of it. We got a special group. They're, you know, they're clicking. We're getting back some healthy bodies. If there was a consideration, it was, you know, a couple weeks ago, how do we replace that firepower? And I think internally we've kind of answered that.
Really, part of it also has to be having the right pieces to be able to make it, right? I mean, Lakers don't necessarily have great pieces to unload. You guys, you know, other than Bron, really didn't have great pieces to be attractive. You know, your first round picks aren't going to be, you know, lottery picks.
You know, ultimately, you guys know you've got to give to get, and we were not willing to give up any of our core rotation guys because you've got a unique thing, you know, in that locker room. So that's what really kind of what it came down to. It would have had to have been an over-the-top deal where it was an absolute no-brainer. Otherwise, we want to give these guys the freedom to make the run.
Did Roddy come up in virtually every conversation you had?
Roddy is a very popular Maverick when it comes to receiving phone calls.
Why is that?
Because it's his birthday, by
the way. It's his birthday. Exactly right. And yes, I did sing him happy birthday today. Yes.
How,
they'd probably sing
yeah,
you
it was
for
a,
keeping...
Yeah, it was a twangy country version. I don't think he appreciated it.
How far do you think chemistry can take this team? Mix of talent.
Well, I'm right there with Jet. There's no reason why we couldn't... make the run, go to the distance this year.
Chemistry, chemistry, chemistry.
Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
What I said when we were on with Mark is what I think I stand behind and is my mantra, which is we've watched the Mavs make a lot of deadline deals over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them I think we've all been pretty excited about, although Mavs Nation was a bit split about the Kid Harris trade.
We weren't split on that.
I was always for it. I know a lot of people weren't. Mm-hmm. Even to this day, statistically, with Kid being – if you look at basketballreference.com, which I do, in case anybody forgot.
You do what?
Kid's numbers are ugly compared to his career, and even over the course of his career, still ugly. If he keeps up what he's doing this year and what he's – and it's not like his previous years were all that great, but – say he plays next year at least, he could very well end up being a Hall of Fame point guard with a shooting percentage of under 40% for his career. But he's Kid. He's the basketball genius.
Mm-hmm.
So we recognize that. But anyway, where I was going with that is, of all the years to not make a deal, this is one of the years. If I looked at the Mavs roster on February 15th of every calendar year, this is one of the years, if not the top year, that I could say I'm okay with standing pat. That doesn't mean I don't want to improve here or there. Like I said earlier about Prince being the guy that I had identified as my number one target, but I'm okay. So how did you process all this? What was your gut reaction?
Well, I felt like it really just – I don't understand Detroit, really. I mean
– I don't either.
Mark brought up a good point that maybe – Joe Dumars' hands are tied because the ownership situation is so in flux that he really can't do anything, even though that situation would actually seem to be advantageous for Detroit because they'd be getting more money than taking out.
Yeah, but I can see where if you don't know who your boss is going to be, you don't know what your budget is.
Right.
So there's an angle there that could exist.
I've always, especially since Dirk and Caron went out in January, the team made their decision there on what to do personnel-wise, and that was get Peja Stojakovic. And clearly it looked rough for like 4 or 5 games, and then he got to Houston, and he just tore it up. And ever since then, he's been shooting the lights out. I'd have to get the numbers. I think I still have them somewhere. But the guy has been shooting amazing since that stretch. 59%. 54% from three-point range over his last 4 games, and he's averaging 15.5 points. I mean, you're basically filling the void points-wise of Butler.
Yeah, he obviously isn't as well-rounded of a player, but I also, in that same stat that you're coming from, I think he is shooting 52% from three over that time frame?
54.5.
54. I mean, that's Peja. That's what you signed up for.
Peja signed, baby.
So, it's good. It's hard to complain. I would rather have a two-way player in there scoring 15 a game, but what he's able to do spacing the floor helps the Mavericks in other ways, ways that they didn't have. We covered this when the deal was made. The Mavericks in the Dirk era have not had a shooter like him ever. The closest thing they really had were when Nash and Finley were at their most efficient from three in the earlier part of last decade, 02, 03, 04-ish even. But even at that point, those guys were playing a completely different role on the team. They were doing a lot of other things besides just being there to space the floor for Dirk and others. So I think it's something that we're not used to seeing. I think it's going to benefit the team offensively in the playoffs. But defensively, you do see that drop off a little bit.
He's not as bad as I thought he would be. He has his limitations, but he's not bad. He's not like terrible.
Yeah, he has those moments where he's crafty and gets his hands in there every once in a while. And anytime you get anything out of him defensively, it's a bonus because you don't go in expecting anything. But the Mavericks have enough depth that they're covering for it.
Right.
Yeah. The depth is covering for it, so I'm not going to complain. I'm not going to worry about it. The thing is that the chemistry thing, Donnie was harping on it. You know, Mark touched on it. He's around the guys a lot. You're around them a little bit. It's a sense that you get from just watching the team from afar that they're as tight as they've ever been, and it helps them. And there's times when that's okay. There's times when it's good to just roll with that and see what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is Tayshaun Prince notwithstanding. This is one of those years, and I'm good with it. And
They were just being opportunistic. They weren't desperate.
Yeah, as always, you know, as they always are.
They weren't desperate. So,
mid-season grading out, we talked about doing report cards. Where are you at, brother?
I gave Rickster an A. I know a lot of people don't like that. Uh-oh.
That's my brother.
You got the hot tub ready for him. I remember Mark Stein talking on ESPN Radio one day, talking about Rick, and he's got great perspective because he travels all over the country getting all kinds of information. And what he said, which resonated with me, if you go outside of Texas, Rick Carlisle's stock is through the roof because of what he's had to do. I mean, go back to training camp. Everyone was saying, what is Carlisle going to do? He's got these players. He's got Caron Butler. He's got Sean Marion, Roddy Bubois, Jason Kidd, Dirk, Haywood, Chandler. How are these pieces all going to mesh together?
The gospel of role acceptance.
He laid the hammer down and said, it's about role acceptance. So, and he's held to it. And even today, at practice, he said that the challenge of this was, it's been fun for him. And the challenge of figuring out all the personnel and to make it work was a challenge, but it's something you thrive off of. And he talked about how all the players have been on board, and that makes it even easier. So, and look at the win-loss total. I mean, it speaks for itself.
He is the guy who did the great duct tape and baling wire job in Indiana after the Malice at the Palace. We've referred to it in the past, and we'll continue to, because it was a huge display of the skill that he has at managing a roster. And he's got way more in terms of on-court assets now than he ever has. So I'm not too terribly surprised that he did that, but I agree. I think he's done a very good job. It's well documented that I'm a fan of the Rickster.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to general report card, it's hard. Everybody for me pretty much has done well. I'll tell you who, you know, you have some, obviously, I think Roddy Bubois is an incomplete.
Right.
I don't even want to go there.
I went reactionary and just gave, I did give him an incomplete.
So. Hey, there you go. But honestly, I'll save the tedium of going through every player. For me, obviously, Haywood is not the best. He gets a C-.
I gave him a D with the C me after class.
We know why that is.
He's tearing it up though over the past three games.
For sure. And we've seen it. We've seen flashes out of him before, and I think his whole career has been like this.
Yeah.
The one person that I kind of would, I'm interested where you graded him, that I would like to see a little bit more out of, or not more out of, but feel like I can't quite give him an A, is actually Jason Kidd.
I gave him a B+.
Yeah, I just, it's not that I don't think he's done a good job. I do. I think he's been more than adequate, and obviously he still has those moments where he's very great. His three-point shooting, even though we have an impression that it's very good, it's under 40% this year, where it was around 42% last year. And
it's timely. I think that's what makes it kind of stand out.
It just makes me nervous.
Yeah.
He and Jet both. They are the two guys that fall into this category for me, is that they cannot be inconsistent. They must be consistent offensive threats in some fashion in the playoffs, or it's going to get real tough for Dirk.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
And so those are my guys that I'm giving Bs to. Might even have to give Jet a B- or C+.
I gave him a B. I had a hard time grading the guards. I had a hard time figuring that out.
But everybody else has done fine, because you're grading them relative to expectations. You're not. I mean, JJ gets an A because he's become a great backup point guard in the last 2 months. That doesn't mean he is an A in the entire NBA. He's probably a B-.
Right.
You know, he's a good, usable piece. But relative to expectations, he's done very well and improved from earlier in the year. So you want to give guys credit for that. But yeah, for me, man, it's Kid and Jet.
Yeah. Off on a random tangent. JJ Barea. Yes, sir. Is he going to be here next year?
Yeah.
You think so? Because I think he's playing himself out by getting a bigger contract. I mean, the
little porker.
What is that?
That's when you called him a little porker.
Oh, my bad. That little porker. I forgot. Puerto Rican.
So you think he's going to take it? You think he's going to end up being offered a little more money and take a, and someone's going to want to offer him a larger role somewhere else?
He's not going to get the full mid-level exception by any stretch, but which is over $5 million. I think he can get $3, $4 million, which is healthy compared to what he's getting right now.
It's possible.
The right team can give him the money, especially if it's a team like Miami or New Jersey as a backup to Deron Williams. Probably doesn't seem so likely anymore with New Jersey, but Miami, I mean, come on.
Something to think about. Now, that being said, people are scared of that sub-6-footer.
Yeah, the size is an issue. Yeah.
You know, Darrell Armstrong had a heck of a career, and he wasn't exactly, you know, pined after by many teams. You know, Earl Boykins was serviceable for several years in same sort of situation, so we'll have to see where it shakes out. But
Darrell Armstrong rings that bell like a champion.
I love that dude. Love him and his 10 coffees. Hopefully he doesn't still do 10 coffees before the game now.
I don't know.
He's still I'm sorry, a coffee with 10 sugars. Misspoke.
Oh, that'd be really amped up by
that's
then.
That's crazy, but that's what he used to do before games.
Yeah.
Any other noteworthy midseason grades for him?
I gave Mahimi a B. I kind of I was on the fence with him.
See, but for me, relative to expectations, he's an A+.
Right.
He's done. I mean, he can play. He didn't sniff the court hardly in San Antonio last year and came into this year really probably expecting roughly the same situation. But, you know, when he has gotten on the court, he's been effective. Rick's been smart at using him where he's not overly exposed. He's putting him in good situations to succeed, and he's delivering.
And Mahimi's been working more. I've noticed over the past two or three practices that he's working in the high post or working on the baseline. Lots of practice in that area, working off of that area to extend his range a little bit more. The only three players I gave A's to were Chandler, Dirk, and Marion. That's it.
Marion's got that spring that he didn't have last year. Although I've noticed it recently, he's wearing a sleeve on that calf.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
My pessimistic Mavs fanness is coming out.
Right.
Something's going to happen. But, yeah, he's definitely got a spring in his step that we didn't see last year. Makes him a whole lot more of an effective player as a result.
For sure. For sure. Absolutely. Today's Roddy's birthday.
23. Man, I remember being 23.
Everyone was like, son of a bitch.
You're young. It's like, you're young, dude.
Yeah. So, where are we going next? Are we going to... This is live producing.
This is live producing. You know where I want to go? I want to just roll here, and I want to take you guys, because it is the trade deadline. I did a little research, a little turn back the clock on Mavs trade deadline history. Let me pull this up. I think you guys will think this is interesting, and some of it's kind of funny. Where is it? Here we go. I was only able to go back to 1989, for some reason, the Mavs didn't make any deals from 81 to 88 in the February time frame. I don't know if the trade deadline was different or what. So if anybody happens to know,
let us know.
Chew me out. That's fine. But, you know, this is what I got. And it all started in 1989 with a deal with Mark Aguirre. For those of you who've been Mavs fans for a long time, you remember Mark Aguirre was a linchpin of those 80s teams that were – up until the Mark Cuban era, the most successful Mavs teams in history. But on the trade deadline, they traded him in 1989 for Adrian Dantley and a first from Detroit. Adrian Dantley was like 800 years old.
Holla. Bless you.
And then, that very same spring, Detroit turned around and won the title, and Dantley was not happy. So that was a trade that sucked for the Mavs.
Mm-hmm.
That same a week later, they traded Detlef Schrempf and a second round pick to Indiana for Herb Williams. That was stupid. In 1992, they traded James Donaldson to New York for Brian Quinnett.
Excuse me?
That was Brian Quinnett.
Bless you.
But Donaldson was already a fossil by then, so that's a totally inconsequential deal.
Uh-huh.
This is my favorite.
Okay.
1995, your Dallas Mavericks traded on February 23rd, Moreland Wiley and a 1995 second-round draft pick to Houston for Scott Brooks. Mm. The reason I think this is funny is that here's Scotty Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little white guy hauling down the end of the bench for the 95 Rockets.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to the trade deadline. Everything's going great. He's thinking, man, we're going to make a run this year. We just got Clyde. Hakeem is awesome. Jordan just came back. And then he gets traded to the Mavs.
Sucks for you, champion.
Poor guy. I mean, think about that. That's deflating.
Hey, he made the best of it in the end.
He is the current coach of your Oklahoma City Thunder.
And
now,
he is a tiny guy.
Yeah, he's a little dude. But you know, if you're little and make the NBA, you're a hard ass. It's the mm-hmm. JJ rule, right? Yeah.
The porker.
Yeah. So that kind of concludes the ancient history. But then you get into the Nelly era. And
it's just crazy.
And what, honestly, in 1997, in my opinion, the two worst deals in the history of the Dallas Mavericks. The first one being Dallas trading Jamal Mashburn to Miami for Kurt Thomas, Sasha Danilovich, and Martin Mirsip. Kurt Thomas played 5 games for the Mavs, I think. Yeah, 5 games. And then went to New York.
And he played there.
So Mashburn for nothing. And Thomas is still playing. He's 806 years old.
Yeah, his name popped up yesterday for some reason. I don't even remember
and
why.
And then, 3 days later, in what was at the time, I believe, a record for most players ever involved in a trade, Dallas sent away Chris Gatling, Jim Jackson, Sam Cassell, and Eric Montross. So 3 useful pieces and a big white stiff to New Jersey for Robert Pack, Sean Bradley, Khalid Reeves, and Ed O'Bannon of UCLA fame.
Ed O'Bannon.
So 3 completely useless pieces and a big white stiff. Although Pack actually had a little bit of a record at that point, but he was already getting older, and as you know, he became Ice Pack. He was never healthy. So Nelly, really? Really, Nelly? And then the next year, Donnie completely saves Nelly's ass by finding this German guy.
Yeah, I found this guy for you. Don't worry,
thank goodness that happened, because really, you know, this kind of makes me want to go look at the Don Nelson transaction history prior to Donnie really kind of taking over in Dallas, and then go back also to Golden State, because when I remember Golden State, I remember him trading for Billy Owens, and that didn't work out. And then the whole Weber thing didn't really work out. So I don't know, man. I think we're gonna have some revisionist history.
He got a lot of wins, but he might not be so great.
Well, he was really good at making the best out of crappy players. But he loved dealing. We know he loved dealing, and he was never satisfied with a team. You know, he always had to tinker. And everybody knows that when he came to Dallas, that locker room was just screwed up. I mean, it was just horrible. But you didn't get anything, man. Sam Cassell had a good 5 years after 97. Jim Jackson was never the same after that ankle injury in 95, but you know, he was serviceable, and people at that time thought he still had a lot of value. So you ended up getting nothing. 1998, Dallas traded Dennis Scott for Sed Ceballos. They won that deal.
He's still wearing the blindfold.
And then after that, you get into the Cuban era. 2001 was the trade for Juwan Howard. 2002 was the trade of Juwan Howard for Rafe, LaFrance, and Nick Van Exel and pieces. 2005 was to get Keith Van Horn.
The corpse of Keith Van Horn.
2007 was trading Anthony Johnson to Atlanta for a 2007 second-round pick and a neck.
That was a cup of coffee for Anthony Johnson.
He had no neck. That was his whole problem.
I remember he was terrible.
If you don't have a neck, you can't turn your head. And if you can't turn your head, you cannot play point guard in the National Basketball Association. It's just bottom line.
Sure you can.
And then, of course, 2008 and 2010. 2008 was Kidd. 2008 was Kidd. 2010 was
the Washington Boys.
The Washington Boys. So really, in the late era here, in the last 9 years, 10 years, Mavericks have done very well for themselves, I think.
And I think they did well for themselves today by not doing anything.
Do you have a personal sentimental favorite of these?
The names are crazy when you bring them up again.
Yeah, let me throw the 2001 at you. Christian Laettner, Courtney Alexander.
Okay, you're going to hate me, but I liked Laettner back in the Duke days.
Well, sure, that's fine. He was good.
No, he was a stiff in the pros.
I don't like Duke, but I can acknowledge that he was awesome.
He was a winner in college.
Yeah, so him, Christian, Courtney Alexander, Loy Vaught, Hubert Davis, good old Hubie, Etan Thomas, and Cash for Juwan Howard, Calvin Booth, and the immortal Obinna Ekezie.
Wow.
It takes me back to games at reunion.
Yeah. I don't know if I have a favorite one. It's just funny to hear these names again, because they're stored in the back of the Rolodex.
And you forgot about them.
And they're like, holy crap.
And then it just sort of massages, comes back out of your brain like, wow, I forgot that guy even existed.
Right.
My sentimental favorite is the 2002 trade deadline, just because I was telling you this story earlier. everybody knew, you know, Juwan Howard had that expiring deal. And everybody knew, or no, I guess he had an expiring deal the following year, maybe. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, it was the untradeable contract, and it was going to be traded twice, and it just wasn't working out with Juwan on that team at the four spot. That was before Dirk was even exclusively playing at the four. You know, he was playing some three back then.
Yeah, he was small four.
And I remember being at A&M. I was at a computer lab working on a damn group project with some people instead of at home in front of TNT where I preferred to be. And so while everybody else is working, I'm sitting there hitting F5 on the lone Mavs fan forum over and over trying to get an update before the news of the trade finally broke. So it just takes me back to like the halcyon days of Mavs fandom, if you will.
Juwan Howard has been in the league for 16 years.
That dude, and he's never going to retire.
No.
Never.
No. Crazy, man.
Well, I think we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And then we're going to come back with...
Who knows?
Whatever. We're
live producing.
It's the Mavericks Outsider Report trade deadline special. We've got so much information and just don't know what to do with it all, you know?
Yeah. So that's up after the break.
That's up after the break.
Let's go. That's some funk right there.
That's my man, Jesse Johnson.
There you go. That was a quick break because we're live producing on the go.
Yeah, we're taking breaks so that we can... Uh-oh.
There's something funky. I think it's okay.
We're good now.
It's okay.
So anyway, we're going to do a quick NBA Nuggets.
We still got to get you a theme song.
And Brian had an NBA Nugget that he...
It's been festering in my head for about 2 weeks now.
Our last show, which was a Monday ago, so it's like been 10 days. It's been, festering in your mind, and he's just ready to burst, so go for it, bro.
Rajon Rondo, he is untradeable.
No, he's not.
He is untradeable. Do you remember, there was a game it was at least 12 days ago, where it was the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics.
Yeah.
Rajon Rondo was checking LeBron James, and he stopped LeBron James, giving up a good 7 inches and 70 pounds.
That's true. That was pretty awesome, but that doesn't make him untradeable.
And I like him. He's a pest.
In that game, did you see where he went and got into the...
Yes.
There wasn't a timeout. There was a stoppage of play for some random reason, and so the Heat had an impromptu huddle. And Rondo's like, you guys are on the court. It might have even been a timeout, but they chose to be on the court.
Right.
So since they were on the court, Rondo just walks over there. I love it. Just needle those Heat, dude. Just needle it. He's not untradeable.
He was the difference of that game, though.
Here's why he's not untradeable.
Okay.
The guys on NBA.com call him Rajon Rondo. The guys on ABC call him Rajon Rondo. And the guys on TNT call him Rajon Rondo. You can't be untradeable if people don't know how to say your name.
That just means there's more options. That's just flexibility.
He's just flexible.
He's just flexible. That's been festering in my head. If you're able to give up 7 inches and 70 pounds and get in LeBron James's cage, you're doing something great.
No, it's awesome for your point guard who can very effectively run your team offensively to be able to do that. I mean, he's badass. I really like the guy as a player.
He's
not untradeable yet.
You can't teach what else he does. Being a defender, a leader on the court, rebounder, defender, so on and so forth.
Defender.
You can't defender, pest. You just can't teach that. You can teach the shooting. I mean, eventually, you would hope he gets better with the shooting.
And typically, folks do. So, my nugget.
Okay.
We're going to do a quick nugget here.
Okay.
Hall of Fame. National Basketball Association Hall of Fame. Which, honestly, of the three major sports, baseball, football, and basketball, is the least sort of pomp and circumstance, doesn't get the attention. Baseball gets probably the most attention, because I guess it's been around the longest, or that's just the point of view of baseball fans is more history-centric. Football, it's a big to-do. They have the Hall of Fame game. ESPN's out there. There's a lot of rah-rah around it. NBA, not so much. Mm-mm. But what shocked me is there were finalists for the NBA Hall of Fame selection named. And let me go over these. This was from February 18th, so this is not quite a week old yet.
Yeah.
The finalists were Al Addles, Maurice Cheeks, D2 coach Herb McGee, Chris Mullen, Hank Nichols, who was a referee, Dennis Rodman, Ralph Sampson, Jamal Wilkes, Tex Winter, and Dick Motta.
It's impressive on the bottom end of the list.
There's some guys in there that need to be there. There's some guys that I'm honestly not completely educated on, so I'm not going to throw an opinion out there. But then you hear who didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
Reggie Miller. And Don Nelson.
Yeah.
Excuse me? Mm-hmm. Ralph Sampson? Oh, you were 7'4", and you got drafted the year before Hakeem, so I guess we'll throw you out there? The guy was hurt his entire career. I'm not saying he shouldn't be a Hall of Famer by some other stretch. Somebody, I mean, if he was awesome at Virginia, if that matters, whatever. I don't know. I was 3, man, when he was drafted. I don't remember this
stuff. What happened when I was 3?
He was 7'4", but... And it was another guy we could have brought up when talking about freakishly tall guys with Mark that didn't pan out. Because it didn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
But Reggie Miller's Reggie Miller.
I know.
I mean, Maurice Cheeks is... Reggie Miller's at least on the caliber of a Maurice Cheeks. And, you know, Dennis Rodman is a no-brainer to me as a player.
But Reggie Miller's the all-time leader now in three-point makes.
Well, but not only that, but he had a very long career as a prolific scorer and had a lot of playoff success.
He carried the Pacers for a long time.
He definitely did. If you look at the rosters on those teams, I mean, they had some pretty strong teams in the mid-90s, but... For the most part, Smits and the Davis brothers.
They had both of them.
Mark Jackson, and of course, they're really not brothers, but I always called them the Davis brothers because they were both on the Pacers.
Yeah.
But Dick Motta, you know, Dick Motta was a successful coach in Sacramento and here in Dallas. Mm-hmm. Got the franchise off the ground here in Dallas. That's great. How are you going to leave off Don Nelson? I know I was just bagging.
It's because they know his personnel history with the trades.
I was just bagging on... I don't think so.
No, they know.
I was just bagging on Martin Mirsett, but come on. He's the winningest coach of all time. He's Nelly. That? He drinks Coors Light at the post-game presser.
He's waiting to play shuffleboard.
He's Nelly. He plays poker with Willie Nelson. Put his ass in the Hall of Fame. Reggie Miller, Nelson, they don't really have a reason... Especially with Dick Motta, who had a sub-500 coaching record. It was like 470 or something like that. Reggie Miller, it was basically, well, this was his first year of eligibility.
But still.
That pisses me off more than anything about this whole Hall of Fame thing in any sport, is this people that don't even vote, refuse to vote for anybody, first year of eligibility.
That's a stupid thing.
It's like the ultimate triumph of the nerdy writer saying, I'm bigger and badder than you, Mr. Record-setting Hall of Fame athlete. It's just ridiculous, man. It really rubs me the wrong way. A player does what he does in his career. Nothing changes from his first year of eligibility to his second or his third, except the attitude of writers. When somebody's obviously great, I can understand if the way history views a particular player who might be marginal changes over the course of some years, and so people kind of, you know, change a little bit, but... You know, as far as your main guys who are clear-cut Hall of Famers and this just hard and fast rule, well, I'm not going to vote for him in his first year. Dude, that's just stupid. Give it up.
That's just a weird, weird facet of writers when it comes to the Hall of Fame.
Nerds. It's just nerds.
Who couldn't play the game. Couldn't play the game.
I want a clip of Ogre from Nerds, of the Revenge of the Nerds, just going, nerd, you know, like he does.
Nerd.
Yeah, more or less like that.
Something. So we're going to take a break.
We're going to take a quick break and come back with more
guests,
more trade deadline goodies in the form of Jeff Skin Wade of 103.3 ESPN Radio and your Mavs TV telecast.
He is the skin of Bent and Skin.
Yeah, he is.
He is. He's in a vital part of that.
He's about 50%. Yeah. And he's calling right now.
He's right now. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back. Mavericks Outsider. Wow, you're going crazy with that bumper today.
That's just random. I know I'd originally planned to cue up some old school, but we were going random and Pink Floyd just jumped out. Nothing we can do on the Mavericks Outsider Report here, courtesy MavsMoneyBall.com. My man Brian Gutierrez dropping the science on everybody.
I don't know about that. I really don't know about that. But we are back and we are here with Jeff Skin Wade
part, a very critical part of the Ben and Skin show, as he is the skin.
We've determined through many, many hours of scientific computation that he's roughly 50% of Ben and Skin, and that's an important part. So how you doing, man?
I'm good. You know, it used to be different. Before Ben lost 100 pounds, we used to say I was about 35% of that.
Oh, that is true.
Now that Ben's lost so much weight, I guess it's evened out. I guess it's given me more status. So
he looks great.
It's amazing, man. It's so funny. We were in L.A. for All-Star Weekend, and we did this interview with Dirk. And in the middle of the interview, Dirk goes, "Geez, you look great. How much weight have you lost?" I mean, it really is jarring because, you know, I've known Ben for 25 years. He's always been a big dude, but, you know, he looks now about the size he did, you know, right after we got out of high school.
Wow.
You know, it's like, that's when you first, I guess, kind of start putting on weight. And it really is amazing. I mean, hell, he's lost, half of a normal human. So kudos to Ben, man.
Somebody's got to redraw your cartoon characters now is the main thing.
We're working on it. We've got the son of Charles Schultz is working on it right now. Perfect. We anticipate great things.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, it is the trade deadline special for the Mavericks Outsider Report, but before we get into that nice and deep, not just knee deep, we wanted to go first because Skin had the advantage of being out in LA for the All-Star game and all those proceedings. We wanted to make sure that we had a chance to cover that before it gets swept under and we all get crazy about playoff basketball. So, generally speaking, Skin, this is now because obviously last year it was here in Dallas, and I had the opportunity to go in. I don't know, Brian, if you
remember. No, that's awesome, though.
Yeah, it was fun. Got to see some things. And so, Skin, you've seen it twice in a row. What's your general feel? How did L.A. turn it out compared to Dallas?
Well, you know, we were also kind of going through the process of having just gone through a failed Super Bowl.
True, yeah.
And so we kind of had that little bit of perspective. And I thought the All-Star Weekend in Dallas was fantastic last year. I mean, it really, it was cold and it snowed, but kind of all that was out of the way by the time the festivities got started. And I had the Saturday night event down at the AAC last year. I had a really good time. I couldn't get out of the area because it was so jam-packed. I ended up hanging out at a sushi spot down there I like called Kenichi quite a bit. And actually, Nike had their they had a Jumpman thing set up right across the street from Kenichi, and an old buddy of mine that's an old hip-hop guy named Bobito Garcia was kind of hosting it. So that was, like, really good for me and the kind of stuff I'm into. And then I thought that the All-Star game at Jerry World was fantastic just because 100,000-some people there, the way they had the stage set up. Our boy Followell was doing PA on
right.
it. So
yeah, that was cool.
All that worked out great for me. I loved it in Dallas, but you know, me and Ben and then our producer, Frito, we're all out there. And it was almost like at the same exact moment on Saturday afternoon, even before the Saturday night event had jumped off, we all kind of had this revelation of, seriously, why does the Super Bowl ever need to come back to Dallas? When you have a place like L.A. where there's so much cool stuff going on. I mean, I've been in Dallas my whole life except for a couple years. I kicked it down in Austin, and I love Dallas. It's a great place to live, but it's not some awesome destination. It's just a great place to live and raise a family. But as far as destination goes, if I'm having an All-Star event or Super Bowl or whatever, if I'm not having it in a place like LA every year, I think they're kind of doing it wrong. I mean, it's just, dude, there's just so much cool stuff there to do. And I understand Dallas has big aspirations and that's cool, but I just kind of look at Dallas as good people live here. It's an easy place to raise a family, all that kind of stuff. But it's not some great destination spot. I mean, really, what do we have here? Like when people come in town and they get in Dallas, what is it that they want to go do? They want to go see where Kennedy got shot.
Yeah, yeah, it's sad, but
true. I mean,
true.
That's pretty much end of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the venues are cool and the teams, you know, we got great owners and stuff, but Dallas isn't some great destination spot. The All-Star event is custom made for a place like L.A. It really is. Yeah. And we had a great time. I'm assuming you guys watched the Saturday night stuff on the tube, right?
Oh, yep, for sure, for sure.
Let me ask you, Roddy, when you guys saw the dunk contest, how did it come off on the tube? Was it lively? Was it like, oh my god, this is a great dunk contest? How were you guys observing the dunk contest?
I thought the creativity was off the charts. You were getting that sense. I thought the building was a little dead.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah.
But the dunk contest itself, it really built up. But for me, the jumping over the Kia actually kind of took some of the air out of it.
The hype leading up to it really killed it. And even with TNT, they almost missed it. I mean, they were so focused on the choir and the solo act.
They cut to it way too late. Yeah. Like, I didn't even see. I had to see it again. And granted, the greatest degree of difficulty was actually having to force Baron Davis to give up the ball. I get that. But, you know, it kind of, I'm like, do I need to get a little red wagon and go jump over it and do a layup? I mean, it's just something that with what Jamario Moon did and for almost no recognition.
DeMar DeRozan.
I'm sorry. Yeah. DeMar DeRozan. Sorry. And then I thought
Are you talking about the showstopper?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then,
yeah, the showstopper was the baddest dunk in the contest.
Yeah, by far. And then
Ibaka.
I thought Ibaka in general was robbed in terms of judging. So somebody needs to take, look, Dr. J, all due respect, all due respect to the originators, okay? Seriously. But somebody needs to take Dr. J off of these panels because he gets such a whatever stuck in his craw whenever somebody else jumps from the free throw line, even though they outdo him. He refuses to give him a 10. I'm kind of out on that.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing that was wacky about it was, you know, when Blake Griffin did his second round dunk, I don't know how it came across on the TV, but all the judges looked at each other like, all right, let's do the math in our heads. Who's supposed to give it what so we can see this stupid car dunk here in 10 minutes? I mean,
yeah,
it was so staged that it was like, I mean, to literally watch those guys look at each other and they didn't even know what card to pick up, I mean, that kind of, from that point on, it was really hard to get into. And then, you know, knowing in advance that the car dunk, and I didn't know there was going to be a choir and all that other kind of stuff, but for the amount of hype leading up to it, the actual dunk just didn't deliver.
Right.
And if you're going to build something up like that, I think if we knew nothing about the car, nothing about the choir, and he did all that, we maybe would have perceived it a little bit different. But I expected to see something crazy, and it just was really a bunch of spectacle and not much more. But, you know, the game is funny. You talked about the building being dead. The building is dead. And we watched the first half of the All-Star game, and then we watched Rihanna. And then we decided to go eat because we're all starving. So we didn't watch the second half at Staples. We watched it right down the street at a restaurant and watched the second half on TV in a restaurant. And everyone was way into it in the restaurant. It was way more lively in the bar we were in for the second half than the first half at the actual game. And so I think that, you know, that speaks a lot about the LA crowd, and mm-hmm. you know, we were pretty high. We were up in the press box. So, but everyone I talked to who saw it on the tube, you know, said what you guys are saying, that it came off as a little dead, and that really speaks more to the people of LA as right. opposed to, you know, the events.
Yeah, I totally agree. It just the Saturday night, the whole beginning to end was really good.
Yeah.
I mean, every event was fun to watch, even with Team Texas just melting down when they had a chance to win and they had like 45 seconds to hit a half court shot and they couldn't do it. It was just crazy.
Okay, now when you said Team Texas melting down, I thought you meant Kevin Durant and Booby Gibson.
Yeah.
UT grads just stinking up the joint in the three-point contest.
That really was the one beef that I had with the proceedings on Saturday was the quality of the three-point shootout.
Right.
For starters, for me, I feel like the field needs to be enlarged a little bit. I want to see a little more drama in that initial round as far as what kind of score guys have to try to put up to move on to that final round. But I love Kevin Durant. I think he's great for the league. I think he's a great guy, but he doesn't need to be in a three-point shooting contest. I mean, we grew up
he's
on...
not even shooting a high percentage yeah. right, this year. Right. I mean, like, what gives?
I mean,
you know what else I realized halfway through his round is I was like, you know, I just realized Darrell Wright just throws the ball at the basket. That's not even a good release.
Right.
He's got like a hitch, and he got tired really quick. And on about the third rack, I mean, he was literally, if you look at, watch it, he was kind of throwing the ball. I mean, he didn't even have a good release at that point. You're right. They need to screen it down. And I don't know. I don't know how they would have it because, you know, different people in different systems shoot different. Like, I'll put it to you this way. If Deshaun had ended up in the three-point contest, that wouldn't have been very good.
No.
I mean, Deshaun's had a great ugly. Year and yeah. it's working out for him. But you guys have seen him warm up.
Yeah.
He's not like some classic shooter in that mold, but they could have looked at a percentage and gone, oh yeah, well, Deshaun Stevenson, he needs to be in this. I don't know what the answer is, but that was a pretty lackluster three-point shooting contest.
Yeah, it seemed like back in the day, I mean, I remember when Craig Hodges had to wear an NBA uniform because he wasn't even on a team. You know, I mean, they were mining the fields for pure shooters. Hard. I mean, you had you know, one of the Person brothers in it every year, or, you know, a Dale Ellis type of guy, or somebody. It seemed like they were a little more effective at that in the past, and I think now there's so much emphasis, and for understandable reasons, so much emphasis on showcasing particular guys, which you got to find a way to do that. But man, you can showcase like Mark Price was in it a lot. You know, guys like that. You know, it's interesting to have a fan be able to watch a guy just go nuts and kill it from the three-point line, as opposed to watch Durant kind of struggle when you're going to get to watch him next Sunday on the broadcast on ABC or whatever anyway. So what's the difference?
You said Mark Price, and that reminded me of two things. Number one, the answer to the question, it may not be good, but it would at least be entertaining, is an old-timers three-point shooting.
Oh,
contest.
Yeah.
Ooh, that would be good.
Like rolling out Bird and Price and, you know, just guy who hell get Bill Curry out there, whatever. Just have the old-timers. And not even have to be super old guys, but, you know, guys from the 80s or whatever. But this is funny. Are you guys swept up in Jimmer mania?
A little.
Jimmer Fredette?
A little bit.
Okay. It's like people that are like way into him. If you at all question his abilities, you're a Nazi. Like, you're like the worst person walking the planet Earth. And like at the station, we got this guy that went to BYU.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the air talking about Jimmer one day, and I said, you know, he's obviously, you know, prodigious college scorer, he's lights out, whatever, but when I watch him, he works so hard
yeah.
to get separation and to get a shot that I wonder what that's going to be like in the NBA.
Right.
And, you know, people questioned Redick, and I was one of the people that questioned Redick, but that was because he never played point in college. And I thought he's going to be too small, but he found a great role. You know, whatever. Jimmer's going to have to be a point guard, so he's going to have to, you know, free himself up, whatever. But I was talking about Steve Nash, and I said, you know, if you just watch Nash, it looks like he's working so hard to get a shot, but he's practiced that shot, and he makes these unbelievably difficult shots. And, you know, I got to watch him practice as a Maverick, and I would watch him practice these crazy release points all the time. Like, he practices those shots. And the whole point being, it's harder for him to get separation. And this BYU dude that works our station was offended. He was somehow offended that I compared him to a two-time MVP. I'm like, you guys are so on crack and so defensive about this little squirrely white guy. I said, what if he ends up being someone like that? And you're offended by it. It's like, relax. He's a little white guy that's scoring a ton of points in college. There's a ton of other little white guys that have scored a ton of points in college. It doesn't mean that he's supposed to be first-team All-NBA. He may fit. He may be Travis Diener. There's nothing wrong with that. Right. I don't understand why people are so freaking worked up over this little white guy.
It's because he's a great white hope.
Yeah, he's the native son.
There's a great white hope every year.
Yeah.
There's one every single year. But I swear, people are different with Jimmer. And maybe it's his name. I don't know what it is.
Jimmer!
There's a difference here. And I feel like I have to take on the Aryan Brotherhood anytime I remotely question his ability. I don't. It's over the top. Clearly, I'm frustrated by it.
Obviously, but this is your chance to vent.
Yeah, I mean, this is our audience is broad and wide, so by all means, go for it. I think that
thank you, Mavs Moneyball.
Yeah, I think that you need to be the point guy for the old timer 3-point campaign here. That's huge. I think that'd be awesome.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
It would.
Because you never forget. I mean, there's an old guy at everybody's gym that just kills it from deep, right? Take that guy, except he used to be a 44% shooter from three in the NBA. That would be incredible to watch. So,
and, you know, on another level, I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, Magic and Derek Harper, and I don't know who else you want to throw in there, Danny Ainge, whoever else. Let's see them do the skills competition. I want to see those guys throw the outlet pass and make the 15-foot jumper and do that. Let's get old guys to – let's have an old guy All-Star weekend, shall we?
Yeah. It's got to be in Florida then, probably. Florida or Arizona. Maybe Arizona.
Sponsored by the retirement community.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, listen, why don't we go ahead and get into why we're all here today?
Right.
NBA trade deadline. And I don't know about you, Skin, but for me – I think this has got to be the most active end-of-day trade deadline in in the last 10 years, at least in the Cuban era, since I've been really paying attention. I feel like the number, just the number of deals has been tremendous.
Yeah, it has been. And, you know, we were kind of talking the other day. So within a 24-hour period, you know, two Team USA guys get traded, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And but the thing about those trades is those weren't made with this year in mind. I mean, the Knicks can say whatever they want, but, you know, they're at best, they may be a little bit better than they are. I think they've taken a step back for the time being, but I think it's a good trade for them. It's a trade they needed to make. But I don't think it makes the Knicks any more formidable than they were before, and before they were a middle-of-the-road Eastern Conference team.
Right.
But the same thing with Deron Williams going. You know, Utah was struggling. They're on the fringe of the Western Conference playoffs. I'd be surprised if they made it now. But and obviously New Jersey's not in the mix. So you didn't really have, you know, trades where it was like, at least at the early part, trades to try and, you know, help guys get over the top. But the deal that went down, you know, I didn't even hear any rumors about it until it happened, was Kendrick Perkins going to Oklahoma City. Right. I think that has a huge impact on the top four seeds. Not only potential seeding, but what will happen from the second round on. I think you took an Oklahoma City team that was fun, and I, you know, enjoyed watching them. And I think that you, if they can get Perkins, if he's going to be full 100% health and they can get him to blend in, I think it changes them a little bit. And I take them a little bit more seriously, where before I thought there were three teams that could come out of the West. I don't think you make them a favorite or anything, but I think you have to consider Oklahoma City a little bit differently now, because the one thing they couldn't do is protect their basket, and that's what that guy does.
Yeah, yeah. Brian and I were talking pre-show. Oklahoma City had literally nobody on their roster that could fill that role effectively. And Perkins is not just an okay guy at that. He's a pretty good guy at that. He's a guy that when he went down in the playoffs for Boston, that was a very big deal.
Right.
That crippled them. Yeah, that wasn't just a, oh, that sucks, our depth is hurt. That was crippling. So for them to land him, that's great. And part of it, I was telling Brian before the show, they have the, in some respects, the emergence of Serge Ibaka to thank for that, because even though he's not the same player as Jeff Green, it helped, I believe, to make Green more expendable.
Yeah, I think that's partly right. I agree with that. I think the other part of that is that there ain't enough balls for Jeff Green.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, if you for what he is, Jeff Green, I'm don't get me wrong, Jeff Green is a good basketball player. I like him. I'd love to have him on the Mavericks. But he's kind of stuck between 3 and 4. He's one of those kind of guys. He's developed a pretty good outside shot. I think he's dependable. He can score around the basket. He can score without running plays for him. He does all that stuff. But they got Westbrook, Durant, and Harden. They got no problem sticking the ball in the basket.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in that regard, Jeff Green was already expendable. I think to your point about Serge Ibaka, he can easily slide over to the four. And then your front line, you know, I have a belief on frontline basketball in terms of protecting your basket that I believe in. I believe that you need, if you're going to properly protect your basket, you need a position defender and you need a weak side shot blocker, and they work in tandem. The Sacramento Kings of the early part of the 2000-2001, that era, they were a far better defensive team than anyone gave them credit for, because they were so good offensively.
Right.
But what happened was, once Chris Webber blew out his knee, they could no longer protect their basket. They had Vlade, who was a great position defender, and they had, you know, Webber, who obviously was a ridiculous athlete at his size and was a pretty good shot blocker. So they had a defensive dynamic in there, and once he blew his knee out, that was gone, and that changed the complexion of that team forever. I think you can have a similar thing here, in that we all know Ibaka's ridiculous athleticism and being both an on-the-ball defender against, you know, more athletic fours, as well as being a weak side defender. And I think Perkins is as good of a space-eating position defender around the basket as you'll find. I think they've changed their defensive dynamic along the baseline dramatically. And very, very impressive move by Sam Presti. That guy has done a remarkable job with that team.
It just seems like both teams, Boston and Oklahoma City, have kind of given themselves an instant culture shock change,
with what's going on, like you've already talked about with Perkins coming into Oklahoma City. But now with Boston, I mean, Doc Rivers has said before that his core group of players has never lost a playoff series together. Now you're taking Perkins out of the mix. You're having to depend now on Shaq, Jermaine O'Neal, and probably even more Kevin Garnett at the five. I know people are saying that it's almost destined for Troy Murphy to go to Boston, but I have my concerns with Boston with that kind of move. What do you think about it?
I understand for the now, but you basically, that's a very old basketball team,
mm-hmm.
and they just got a really good young player. And so it's kind of ironic, too, that, you know, the way the deal went down when Boston traded their pick to Oklahoma City to get Ray Allen, or, you know, to the Sonics, yeah, to get Ray Allen, and that pick was Jeff Green. And that's full circle, and they're getting Jeff Green back. But, I don't know. I think that's a really tough decision, but I kind of respect Ainge for going for it. It reminds me a little bit of the way Jerry West used to manage the Lakers. I don't know if you guys probably way too young to remember this, but when the Lakers traded Norm Nixon for the rights to Byron Scott, Jack, who sat on the, right by the coaches for the Lakers forever, wore all black because he thought it was a Laker funeral.
Wow.
He was so devastated by it. And Norm Nixon was a fan favorite, and him and Magic started together, and it was great. But that's looking ahead. And going, I've got a really old team, and we've got to be able to stay relevant. And so I think by having, Shaq and O'Neal and to some degree Big Baby and some of these other guys that, none of them are going to be, what Perkins is because of his youth and length and all that, I think they felt like they could probably stem the tide while adding a really good, talented player. So while I understand the argument of, hey, why would you mess with this until it loses, I kind of respect it because I think it's very aggressive, and I think Boston needed it.
I also wonder if they didn't really take a look at the way the East is shaping up. And outside of Orlando, obviously, with Dwight Howard, they may be looking at that whole situation and say, we can survive this and take our chances with Shaq. With Shaq strapping it on one last time if we luck into the finals against an LA or a San Antonio or whoever else that might have the size that you don't see in the East.
No, I think that's an excellent point, man, because the other thing about it is, who of their competition, is just going to beat you up inside. I mean, I don't think there really is anybody else. And so I'm a big fan of when Chicago gets healthy. I think they're going to be tough to contend with. But it's not like, you're going to have to stop Joakim Noah from scoring. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he gets his baskets in a lot of the same ways Tyson Chandler does.
Right.
So it's not like, it's like Boston met up with Dallas. They wouldn't go, oh, my God, how are we going to stop Tyson Chandler? Chandler affects the games in different ways other than, worrying as a team. You've got to, box out and do those things. But you don't worry about them posting up Tyson Chandler and beating you that way. Same thing with Noah. So aside from Dwight Howard, and I think Orlando's kind of a weird mix anyways, if I'm Boston, I think I'm a better team than them with or without being able to quote-unquote stop Howard. Hell, half the time Howard can't even get the ball because they're jacking up threes or Jameer Nelson's got it doing something ridiculous with it. So I think that's a good point. I think when you talk about them trying to get out of the East, that's not a problem. The problem would be playing the Lakers in the finals. That's where it would probably come back to bite them if that scenario presents itself.
Right. I can see that. Yeah. So again, we're here with, we need to mention who we're talking to.
We're doing a supersized segment here. So we got to reset at some point.
We're here with Jeff Skin Wade, firmly entrenched as 50-50 of Ben and Skin on ESPN Radio 103.3. We're heavily entrenched in our trade deadline special here. Going back to the Western Conference, obviously the bottom half has really changed with what's gone on as of late, especially with Deron Williams leaving and Carmelo Anthony obviously leaving. What are you seeing in that bottom half of the Western Conference playoff run now and how that can affect the Mavericks?
I haven't taken a look at the schedules of the teams that are in the mix. Nobody want to talk about, obviously Utah and Denver and Memphis and Phoenix and that group of teams. I haven't looked at their schedules to know, okay, hey, I favor this team or I favor that team. But, you know, I would say collectively, I the Mavericks or the Spurs or the Lakers or Oklahoma City shouldn't fear any of them. I think on the bottom half of the bracket, you know, the only teams that, and I don't think that any, I don't think 1 through 4 will lose in the first round. I don't think it's like the Western Conference of years past. But I think the only two teams that are troubling from the standpoint of making it be a long series and maybe beating you up a little bit would be New Orleans and Portland.
Mm-hmm.
I think from a Mavs perspective, I would probably least like to play New Orleans just because I wouldn't want to have to stay in front of Chris Paul for a whole series. I could, you know, he does a lot of damage. That's no disrespect to Portland. Aldridge is having a great year. But, you know, I'd probably rather contend with Portland than contend with New Orleans. Having said that, I'd be shocked if Portland and New Orleans weren't 5 and 6 or vice versa. So if the Mavericks can maintain their pace and be one of these top two seeds, I think they're going to get a really favorable draw in the first round, no matter who it is. I think that's a real key. You know, a couple weeks ago, I was leaning more towards, I'd be really interesting for the Mavericks to actually fall to 4, because I think that of, you know, them and the Lakers, San Antonio and the Lakers, they fear the Spurs the least. I mean, they, in fact, the last 3 times they've been in the playoffs, the Mavericks have won the last 2 times
mm-hmm.
in terms of the series. So the Mavericks don't fear the Spurs. So it's like, I'd rather play them, even though the Lakers have been dicey, I'd rather play the Spurs. But now I just see tremendous advantage in being one of the top 2 seeds, because I think there is a sharp drop-off from 4 to 5 and an even sharper drop-off from 6 to 7.
Yeah, I can see that too.
How shocked were you?
Which way are you guys leaning? Like, who down there scares you guys?
Yeah,
no one really scares me other than the teams that you mentioned, so...
It brings me back to the feeling of getting to run into Memphis in the first round in 2006. You know,
that's a good example. I agree.
Since that point, Dallas either had a little bit of a regular season downturn to where their seed was lower, or ran into something that was tougher because of the overall strength of the West, where you had a couple years there where your 8 seed had 50 wins or whatever the case may have been. And I feel like it's been a while since we got that good old first round. You know the opponent's inferior. Let's just go play some solid ball, and we'll see you next round. And so, yeah, I don't have a big threat.
Phoenix kind of throws me off, because you can always get caught up into just up and down, and that can get troublesome in some situations.
I think, you know, my feeling on, you know, for Phoenix to win, they got to get red hot.
Right.
And I just don't think that they would be able to do that over a series. I mean, when the Mavericks play Phoenix now, it's not like it was a couple years ago. Just if you just watch Dallas body language, they treat it like they're playing, you know, Jersey or somebody. I mean, the level of respect is not there. They all respect Nash, but they're so much better than Phoenix now. You can just tell the Mavericks don't take those games too seriously. And I know the last time they played them, it was the game before the All-Star break, and it's really hard to get teams to play well that night.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mavericks were just kind of goofing off. Yeah. I mean, I don't fear Phoenix. I respect Steve Nash, and he can do anything, but that's an old team, at least for the important guys or older guys. I'm not impressed with the Suns.
Boom.
The whole thing changed when Amari left, obviously.
Yeah.
If I'd have told you 6 years ago that Grant Hill would be doing this right here, right now, You wouldn't have given me a dollar, man. That's the one shocking thing about what's going on over there.
Grant Hill is way better in his late 30s than he was in his early 30s.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah.
So how shocked were you when you rolled out of bed this morning? And of course, you got the early shift, so you were up early, so you probably saw it real time with the Deron Williams deal.
The Deron Williams thing shocked me because, I mean, a couple of reasons. One, I felt pretty strongly that the Mavericks were acquiring Devin Harris to try and get Deron Williams.
Mm-hmm.
So when it happened, I'm sorry, Devin Harris to get Deron Williams. So when it happened, I was like, wow, I was more accurate than I ever thought I was. And the other thing about it is we hadn't been hearing Deron Williams trade rumors.
Right.
You know, usually there's some kind of smoke. And, you know, I think if you look at the deals that Presti has done, not just the one today, but Presti does a good job of you don't know what's going on until it happens. And, you know, this one, this Darren Williams thing came down. I think it's pretty obvious that, one, the Mavericks are onto something, knowing that Utah liked Devin Harris's game. And, two, they clearly like Derek Favors a lot because they weren't even shopping the offer. They found two guys that they really liked, and they went and got them. And, you know, I respect it. That's the way Utah does their business. And could they have gotten better deals? Maybe, perhaps. But they zeroed in on guys they liked. They went and got them. They cut bait. Now it's something new. I think for Darren Williams, you know, he went from a situation he didn't like to one that he's going to hate. I mean, that's a horrible team, and he's got a coach that's going to wear him out.
Oh, man. And he really thought there for that brief period of time in Utah, man, I've kind of got what I want here. Maybe I'm in a little bit more control, mm-hmm. But I remember that Jerry Sloan presser, and I guess it's Larry Miller's widow that was at that presser.
Yeah.
And she's just this sweet looking little old lady in a sweater, and I could just see on her face, she was just thinking, this is not how we roll in mm-hmm. Salt Lake. And guess what? They didn't.
It's just dramatically changed within 2 weeks.
You know what's funny about that too? It's trying, you know, I know that there's been some Sloan Avery comparisons with the idea of, well, you know, a hard-nosed coach. You know, my perception of Jerry Sloan, it's not like I knew him or anything, but, you know, I've been around the Mavericks for a little while, and I've seen him up close and been around him. Jerry Sloan's tactics, and he's a big jerk and all that, but none of it ever struck me as being ego-driven.
Right.
It struck me as being hard-nosed and of a certain work ethic and of a certain era and those kinds of things, but it was never, hey, I'm the best, look at me. It was, this is how we're going to do it to win. And my perception of Avery has always been that he thinks he's some sort of messianic figure. Like, his ego is so out of control. I mean, look, coaches, players, guys that play at that level, they all have egos. You can't survive at that level without some degree of ego. But his was different. And my experiences with Avery, I respect what he did with the Mavericks. And I've never seen anyone ride so fast and crash so hard. And I don't know how that's going to work out. Maybe Avery learned something from the situation that he was in Dallas. And I don't know. I just think that his ego is so out of control that I don't see that working out very well. That's just
And because of that, Devin Harris may have become one of the first NBA players to say, oh, I'm getting traded to Utah?
Sweet.
Yeah, sweet.
Sweet.
I think we just lost Skin.
Oh, I think Avery just grabbed him and said no.
Well, listen, let's go to quick break.
Okay.
We want to touch base with Skin real quick before we leave you today regarding the future of the Mavs season and the remainder here as we run up to the playoffs. So why don't we go to a quick break and we'll get Skin back on the horn and come back on Mavs Outsider Report, courtesy MavsMoneyBall.com. Hey, there he is. Never mind.
Oh. This is totally spontaneous, but like it just works. I we were saying that Avery just grabbed you and said, that's enough. That's just enough.
Well, I thought Devin Harris was celebrating so hard that he knocked me off the air. I didn't know what happened.
Yeah, he came by and just kicked the plug right out of the wall. And
right on out.
Everything fell. It was actually perfect timing, though, because we were just getting ready to segue in, and Brian was going to hit you up with some Maverick-centric questions.
So this is obviously the trade deadline special of the Mavericks Outsider Report. We've talked about the trade deadline from the NBA perspective, and now everyone was anticipating what was going to go on today for the Mavericks. There was all kinds of rumors about, like what you talked about, going to get Devin Harris to get Deron Williams, Tayshaun Prince, Gerald Wallace a couple weeks ago, Steven Jackson, G.R. Smith's name popped up. What did you take away from today knowing that the Mavericks stood pat?
Well, I guess I wouldn't call it standing pat because I think there were certain moves they wanted to make and the other teams wouldn't cooperate. I didn't want the Mavericks, you know, this time of year, I think people just want something to happen.
Right.
Something's got to happen. It's the trade deadline. And, you know, the Mavericks have a really good team.
Mm-hmm.
And they've also got a very delicate balancing act trying to find time for all the guys they already have. So if you're just going to throw someone else in the mix, I want it to be a good trade that really fits. And I don't think that those trades are out there for the Mavericks. So I'm not, you know, upset. I believe they're good enough to emerge from the Western Conference. I don't know that I think there's, well, I don't know. You know, who knows what's about to happen in Boston? I mean, I would say on paper that some of those teams in the East probably, I think, are a little bit better still. But I don't think it's like – I don't think that the gulf is wide enough to where it's like, okay, the Mavericks can't compete. They compete with anybody.
Right.
And I don't know that I'm all for just doing a trade unless it was like a real minor thing. I think that they're in a pretty good place right now. And now it's just kind of, all right, how much better can we be from where we are right now? How much better can Roddy be? You know, what is Page's ultimate role? Is he going to, are we going to be able to count on him against everybody because he's more of a offensive player than a defensive player? I just think that with their depth, if they can keep everybody happy, they can match up with anybody. So there's no team that you're going to go, well, this is a horrible matchup for the Mavericks, because they can switch out their lineups and do different things. So I don't think that they're the best team in the league, but I think they're, you know, right up there with the best teams in the league. And I'm not upset that the trade deadline passed and they didn't do anything.
Yeah, for me, it was a distinctly different feeling relative to the roster this year as opposed to the last two seasons. One trade deadline, obviously 2 years ago, where nothing happened. And then, of course, last year, where you had Josh Howard on the team and there was general dissatisfaction with the direction that was going. And you just kind of felt like you were on the tail end of something that had worked. Whereas this year, you're on the beginning of something that has started working very well. So that driving feeling of, man, I really need a move here or there, unless it was just the right guy and the right fit. My favorite was Tayshaun Prince. I think he would have had that small forward spot locked down. He's just two-way enough for what the Dallas Mavericks are trying to do. But you know, when that didn't come in for the right price, it's kind of like, hey, let's just strap it on and go play ball, you know?
Yeah, and let me ask you this. I agree with you. I would have liked to have seen Tayshaun Prince here. But would they have made the move for Tayshaun Prince and you go, my God, this is the best team in basketball? Or would you think he would have made them a little bit better? And in other words, what degree better would Prince have made them? I think he would have made them better. And that's where you get into the whole, okay, well, what are you going to give up to get him? Are you willing to give up, you know, I don't know, Barea? Are you willing to give up, you know, along with the Butler contract and cash and a pick? You know, if they're not willing, if Detroit's not willing to just get some savings, get some cash and a pick out of it, I don't know what else you do to get Prince. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like, I think they handled it the right way. I don't think that they should have overpaid for any of the guys that were out there, and they still have a chance to get better. I think they handled this trade deadline the right way.
I agree. I mean, the writing was on the wall, basically, with Detroit, that if you want them, you're going to have to overpay. And there's been incidents where the Mavericks have done that, and it worked, and sometimes it didn't. And they're smart enough to realize, like Donnie Nielsen said today, the chemistry is locked in, and you just don't want to mess with that.
Management needs to know not when to screw it up. You didn't have that burning sensation in your gut of gotta make a move, or just
hunger.
And one more thing, this will be a really interesting draft, for not from the standpoint of the people that are in the draft, but from the standpoint of movement, because that'll be the last opportunity for people to make moves before the uncertainty of the new collective bargaining agreement. So if they had given, it's not that this is a great draft. Don't get me wrong. I mean, most people see it as a weak draft. But if you still have your first round pick and some other things that you can trade around the trade deadline, around the draft day to improve your team going forward, if there's not a clear cut move that you think makes you better, I think it's okay holding on to some of that stuff and seeing if there's other deals to be had right before teams really freak out because there's, you know, going to be a new deal and no one knows what's about to happen. So, you know, I think it would have been cool if they could have traded Caron Butler for a trade exception, because that basically, but the other thing we don't know, hell, if there's a hard cap next year, there's no such thing as trade exceptions anymore. There's no exception. The hard cap is a hard cap. So, you know, I don't know. That may have not done anything for you, and then you lose the rights to a player. So, you know, we'll see how all that shakes out. But again, I think we're all on the same page. This is a really good team. They didn't have to make a move. And, you know, we'll see where they go from here.
What's your take real quick on Caron Butler? What, I mean, he's just determined as hell to get back on the court in time for the playoffs. What are you expecting in that situation?
I expect nothing. I expect him to have that attitude, because that's the attitude he has, and that's one of the things that makes him, you know, who he is and great to have around, and why he's got the nickname Tough Juice and all that kind of stuff. But man, that's a messed up injury. And you know, if you look at Caron Butler 3 years ago, you watch his game then and watch his game, you know, in the last 2 years, there's an explosiveness factor that's not there anymore because he'd gotten a little bit heavier and he changed his game a little bit. And I think that he needed, you know, remember there was a lot of talk about him losing weight over the off season and, you know, becoming a leaner athlete and body fat. And I think he went up and worked, if I remember correctly, with the Chicago guy, what's right. his name, Glover or whatever. But still, there's, you know, the explosiveness that he had when he was younger, I think, is gone. And so I just wonder, you know, having a major knee injury and not having an entire offseason to rehab it, that would make me think that my expectation level for what he can deliver, because you don't want to have a situation like when Jameer Nelson came back for the finals. That was horrible. I mean, that right. completely derailed Orlando. Not that they would have won that series anyways, but I was like, all right, let's work this guy in now for see if we can make something happen in seven games. It was, you know, they're going to, by the time they get to the point where Cron Butler's ready to come back, Page is going to have his role locked in. Roddy's going to have his role locked in. Marion's got his role, so on and so forth. So to try and work a guy back in and get him comfortable to where he can contribute, that just seems really dicey to me. I love that he's going for it. I know that the guys in that locker room love him and they respect it. So, you know, go for it. But my expectation level is not very high.
Is Tim Grover the name you're looking
Tim
for?
Tim Grover, yeah.
Yes.
Power of the internet.
Yeah, Jordan's guy.
Yeah.
For me, the whole Quran thing boils down to the biggest benefit that will come from this is the effect it has on the room in terms of all the other guys on the team saying, you know, especially since the front office obviously felt that Quran's presence and chemistry, Donnie mentioned chemistry four times in the audio that Brian had today, as a very serious factor as to why they kept him, looking at Quran and saying, look how bad this guy wants this. Look at what he's doing. You know, he was out for the season as of January 1, and here he is just busting his ass. It just it kind of picks everybody up. Carlisle always uses that phrase, pick each other up, and when he does it, he's talking about things like seven guys in double figures for however many games in a row or whatever it is. But that's sort of an ulterior way of doing that with a guy that's already a leader like Quran is. For me, that's the biggest benefit of him rehabbing his heart. I can't imagine him getting worked in, like you say, Skin, for any meaningful minutes. By the time you get into the playoffs, you want to be a well-oiled machine. You don't want to mess with the inner workings. But he's going to be – he's just number one team guy, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you're saying. And I think if they were going to trade him, it would need to be something that the guys would really be excited about for all those reasons you just outlined.
Right. Well, we've kept you, we've just smothered you for as long as we can, pretty much.
I do want to say,
full-court press, baby.
We had, you know, initially we thought it would be cool to have you and Mark on in a sort of a roundtable format, but with the rift that has formed around In-N-Out Burger, we kind of felt like we needed to keep you guys separate tonight.
Man, let me tell you something. Whatever Falwell's doing this second, he's trying to tell someone how great In-N-Out Burger is. So. We're getting really tense, so I think you guys made the right decision.
You know, I just wanted to let you know, Mavericks Outsider Report appreciates what you're doing for Whataburger's reputation in this market. We completely concur. However, Falwell was right on the money with Smash Burger. Yeah. I'm a Smash Burger convert now, so I'm going to give In-N-Out another chance when and if it finally lands in Allen or Garland or wherever the first one shows up. I'm going to order it. Special, super secret. Probation, double, whatever I'm supposed to order.
Animal style.
Animal style.
That's what I'll do next time I go. Order it animal style and see if I can get the program. But for now, no. In fact, you know what? You know what's not bad? Mooyah. Go to Mooyah, get A1 steak sauce.
Had it yesterday.
And, American cheese on it.
I meant to tell you that. I've seen you talk about that, and I'm dying to try that place because everyone has told me that place is amazing.
It's a regional variation of Five Guys, basically. It's more or less the same. They have their own Mooyah sauce that you can throw on there. Yeah. But yeah, it's awesome.
The other great thing about Mooyah is some of those locations are owned and operated by the great Barry Newberg, brother of Jamie Newberg. Of the Newberg Report. So right. If you're a nerdy baseball guy, that's a good place
to go. In Ryland's wheelhouse.
Nerdy baseball guys that talk about like how the ratio of time on base versus runs scored. I don't know anybody like that.
No. In fact, I think I retweeted that today and said, hey, you guys need to be following this dude anyway. So we always appreciate the baseball interaction as well.
Well, we like we said earlier, it got weird when we were talking to Folliwell that we're saying that he's such a friend of the show that we see him as a big brother, but then he tried to switch it to say, well, y'all are like my sons. With the age thing, that made it kind of weird, so we made sure to say that he's our
what?
Big...
What age thing? Folliwell?
Yeah. He's trying
oh,
to say...
age.
Yeah,
oh,
age.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, right, right.
So
right.
It was weird in that sense. So he's our big brother. In that instance, you are his cool best friend that wears a leather jacket and is basically too cool for school and everything like
that.
Yeah,
I'm the uncle that rides a motorcycle.
Yeah, there you go. The uncle. That works, too.
Yeah.
So,
Uncle Skin on the motorcycle. Hey, everybody. Gotta go party.
So we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to jump on our Trade Deadline Edition.
You boys are doing a fine job. Thanks for having me.
All right. Have a good night, buddy.
Take care, man.
All right. See you later.
So there is...
There he was.
There's
there he
Uncle's,
went.
Uncle Skin.
Uncle Skin.
Yeah. So it's a family now.
Yeah. We're just trying to build the Mavs family as much as we can because basketball is basketball.
Yeah,
it is. It's an important thing in this world.
Yeah. So what are we doing now?
We're done, man.
We're done.
We're wrapping it up. The trade deadline is done.
It's done.
Many, many deals have taken place. Very few had Western Conference implications, but of the ones that did, we've beaten them to death.
Dirk is ready to see Duncan and Kobe get out.
Let's just kill it. Let's start playing some ball.
I'm ready to take a nap, honestly.
BG's just been, he's had a long day. Trade deadline took a lot out of him. Imagine how Donnie Nelson feels.
Oh, he was fine. He was like, hey, how's everyone going?
He probably got to the point where he had to leave his phone plugged in. I can't imagine how much texting is going on and everything else.
His hand is just used to going up to his ear right now.
Probably a huge beating. Yeah, he's got tennis elbow from raising the hand up to the ear.
Oh, no. So, yeah, I guess then we're done.
We're done. We're going to pick it back up. Hardcore basketball. Back in our regular time slot on Monday from 6 to 8, and we're going to hold that down, and we hope everybody comes around to join us.
Make sure you download the show on Podomatic. Search for Mavericks Outside Report, and subscribe on iTunes. Because we're on iTunes. We're for real.
We're hanging out with Steve Jobs next week.
I know. I got meetings, man.
Yeah.
We're set up for like the next 6 weeks with meetings. So, yeah, this was a great show. This was fun. All kinds of NBA goodies. So now it's the final stretch. 25 games for the Mavericks. We're going to see what happens. It's been We Love Our Boys in Blue. So on and so forth. The new thing now is, I believe, Run for the Roses. That was a new one.
Caught that from Donnie today.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but it's something new.
Donnie can pretty well, when you discover, well, not really discover, but when you effectively scout Dirk, you can say and do whatever. Your meal ticket's punched.
He just points over there.
Yeah. Says, hey, you, get me a sandwich.
So that's it for us. We'll be back, like Rylan said, on Monday. Normal show. We'll go back to more Mavs.
Normal format.
Yeah.
Normal everything.
It'll be good. So for Rylan, for Brian, we'll see you next week.
Can't wait.